It's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better get your headphones and listen up quick. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better listen in public, might make your stomach hurt. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to unwind, you better get that box wine. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to get your snack, you better hurry right back though. It's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants. Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 171, Her Choice of the Purple Pants Podcast. I serve as your humble and oh so gracious host, Bryce Isaiah, and I thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode. If you could be so kind to ensure that you are subscribed to the Purple Pants Podcast, we are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you can find podcasts. The Purple Pants Podcast awaits for you to subscribe. Give your baby boy some 5 stars, write a review, and to tell a friend to tell a friend. Whew, baby, it's been a weekend. It's been a week for us in this country. And I wanted to do something on this podcast to acknowledge the hurt that I know a lot of us, it should be all of us, are going through. So I just want to give you the rundown for this week's episode. We have the church announcements. And on the church announcements, we hear from the women of the Purple Pants Posse. And I asked some very important women in my life to share their thoughts on the overturning of Roe versus Wade. Because you can sit and hear my perspective, but at the end of the day, you need to know when you have to step aside and allow someone else to be heard and to hear their stories and to hear their feelings about it. And so that's what this week's church announcement is. We also have Chappelle is here. We cover episode 4 of P-Valley on Stars. And we have Isaiah Goins stopping by to cover this month's June Purple Pants playlist. And we have the Freak of the Week. So without further ado, here is the church announcements. And before we even get into that, just know I am a son of a Black woman, a mother who is somebody's sister, who is someone's daughter, who is someone's friend, who is someone's wife. And baby, believe me when I say her body, her choice.
Welcome to church. Welcome to church. It's a church announcement, so now. Welcome to church.
For this week's church announcements, I wanted to do something different. I had originally intended to give you my thoughts on what happened with Roe versus Wade and how I felt and the disgust that I feel. However, I thought that it was important for me to step aside and to use my platform to share with you some of the very important and influential women in my life to hear what they had to say about it, because it's not about me, it's about them. And I stand with my mother, I stand with my sisters, I stand with all of the women around the world. I am an ally, and I want to use my platform for something good. And the decision that the Supreme Court overturned this week is just, words can't even express. So here are some of the words of the women that are important to me.
Hi, this is Miss Barb, and I would like to share with you my thoughts on Roe versus Wade being overturned. You know, as I sat and watched the news special break on Friday, June 24th, announcing that the Supreme Court justices have just overruled Roe versus Wade by a 5-4 vote, my heart just sank. So now, a woman's right to have an abortion has been taken away by 5 justices who, by the way, know nothing about the personal lives of all women affected by this ruling. What makes them think it is an easy decision for a woman to decide and or consent to having an abortion? Did these 5 justices ever consider the emotional anguish a woman experiences deciding and ultimately having the abortion as a result of rape, incest, or a medical emergency whereby a decision must be made who lives, the fetus or the mother? I think not. So now, women will have to travel miles to another state to receive an abortion. And what about the women who do not have the means to travel? They will probably resort to having abortions under unsafe, life-threatening conditions. In November, we must vote. Vote out those officials who support the overturning of Roe versus Wade, and vote in those officials who support Roe versus Wade, thereby giving Congress the power to make Roe versus Wade a federal law. Voting in November will send the message that the government should stay out of our health care decisions, and that this is my body, my choice. Article 5 of the Constitution allows Congress to amend the Constitution by a two-thirds vote of both houses of Congress, or if two-thirds of the states request one. The amendment must be ratified by three-fourths of the state legislatures. This has been used to override Supreme Court decisions in the past. So in my mind, we still have an opportunity to have Roe versus Wade amended. And you know how? By voting in November. Love you.
Hi, this is Brooke Kamhai from season 29 of The Amazing Race. As a former state prosecutor and criminal defense attorney, I'm not entirely surprised that this happened. The writing was on the wall, but as a human, I am absolutely appalled. I sit here thinking about the fact that women were stripped of their right to privacy and liberty, thinking about how little girls will have less rights than their grandmothers. I sit and I oscillate between anger and deep sadness. I think about all the people that I know who voted for a lunatic because they thought it would benefit them come tax time, and they brushed off this issue saying, Roe will never be overturned. He can't do that. I feel anger because three Supreme Court justices were placed on the bench by a man who incited violence and led an insurrection, a man who's yet to be punished for any of his actions. And those three justices, one of whom is the worst kind of woman, the kind that turns her back on other women, who all lied under oath to get the job, are taking away our basic human rights. And they blatantly said they'll try and take more. It's all evidence of how the system is failing and crumbling, and it feels like all we can do is sit and watch it happen. It is not the role of the Supreme Court to insert religious beliefs and overturn what has been long declared settled law. Being pro-life is about protecting people once they're viable human beings, not protecting a fetus until it's born and then abandoning it, not caring if it lives in poverty or gets murdered in a mass shooting. People are defending the court by saying the word abortion isn't in the Constitution. Well, neither is the word woman, not once. It's time to realize that a 230-plus-year-old document written by slave owners might not have all the answers, that it might need to be broadly interpreted or updated. If you don't believe in abortion, then don't have an abortion. But that's not what this is about. It's about control, plain and simple, about people telling you what you can and can't do with your own body. It's taking away freedom and free will, and the byproducts of this decision will affect the country as a whole. Poverty rates will rise. Kids who are forced to become young mothers' lives will be ruined. Rape victims will be forced to raise their attackers' children. This is punishing the victim to the highest degree. Abortion is a medical treatment. It's health care, plain and simple. Life-saving basic health care is being withheld from women in 13 states so far. No law should effectively sentence a mother to death. It is so sad to me that a lot of the same people who refuse to wear a mask or get vaccinated because it was their body and their choice on what to put in it are on the front lines celebrating this ruling. It must be nice to have the right to decide what's right for you. This was a short-sighted, narrow-minded, irresponsible, unconstitutional abuse of power, and it won't stop here. Everyone should read this decision and get educated. If you take one thing from this, is read Thomas's concurring opinion and be scared, be angry, get motivated to do something, because even if you're not affected this time, it's not only women who the court is coming for, and they can and they likely will try to strip other groups of their freedoms. I don't mean to be overly negative because I do believe there's hope. I do believe we will get our rights back. And I hope that this atrocity has incensed people so much that they'll turn out to vote in the midterms in record numbers, because it has never been more important to vote. That is the only way we can right the wrong that happened this week. Thank you.
The overturning of Roe versus Wade is just really sad to me, because it just makes people who are already disenfranchised, poor people and those without access to health care, makes it harder for them to succeed in America. And I don't see any kind of support systems being put in place for them if they do decide to keep their babies or make a different decision. And so it's just really hard. And to put your moral thoughts on somebody else is just not right to me. Also, I just think this is the beginning of a slippery slope of trying to eat away at civil liberties and civil rights. You know, I think they're going to come for underrepresented groups who aren't the majority. They are already coming for people who don't fit their thoughts of what is the way to live, whether that's transgender or gay or lesbian, anybody who doesn't fit their narrow view. They're going to try and say that the Constitution doesn't protect their rights, and then try to enact legislation at the state level to make it harder for those people to live. So I just think that it's really sad that this is happening, that we are essentially legislating morality on others. So it just makes me sad. And the fact that I was in D.C. the day they announced it really just hit hard. It's, I don't know, turning into more and more polarization of America. I don't know. Overall, I'm just sad. And I don't even really know how to articulate it. But it's a sad day. It's something that I really didn't see coming. And thanks, Bryce, for letting me get my feelings out a little bit. Love you.
My response to the Supreme Court's recent decision is I'm angry, I'm disgusted, but sadly, I'm not surprised at all. We live in a country where guns have more rights than women. And I think that this isn't going to stop abortion. This is going to stop safe abortion. A lot of people are going to probably die from this decision because they have no other choice than to seek out an abortion in an unsafe way. I know that the Supreme Court is not going to stop with this ruling. They're going to take this and run with it and reverse decisions that are really going to take us back in time and take away a lot of people's rights and freedoms. And it's going to be very dangerous, and it is going to be completely unfair, because as always, it's white men ruling this country, not thinking about anyone else and thinking that they're in charge of everyone else. And I think we just need to keep standing up and keep protesting and don't just sit back and watch this happen.
My reaction to Roe v. Wade being overturned, you know, I think we all saw this coming based off of the leaks of the Supreme Court documents. Unfortunately, this is happening. It's very real. It's very emotional. I'm mad. I'm angry. I'm sad. You know, I cried. I've just felt helpless. You know, as someone who votes regularly, donates when they can, and is very outspoken about my beliefs and what I think is fair in politics or rights, you know, it's really hard to see this happening. This is the first time ever, you know, a right has been taken away, and this is an attack on women. You know, you don't have the choice. You don't have the option to do what's best for you. And, you know, if there's a family or a partner involved, to involve them in that decision, there's no choice. And it really hits when you feel like you're less of a human, of a citizen living in such a great nation, as they say. It's really hard to take on and believe and feel the feelings that are happening and coming to the surface with all this happening. The biggest thing with abortion, you know, I think people don't realize, like, pro-choice isn't pro-abortion. You're just giving the woman who's directly affected by these decisions and what's going on with her body the choice to make the best decision for her. And like I said, if there's a family or someone else involved, to have that discussion and decision and make that decision with them. We don't even have that right anymore. And there's so many instances where, you know, even if the baby is affecting the health of the mother, you're being forced to carry out this pregnancy and ultimately can die. That's scary. You know, I don't think anyone takes abortion lightly or makes that decision quickly and is it's over and it's done and you never think about it. It's a personal and difficult decision, mentally, physically, everything about it is such a hard choice to make. And to not even have that right and to be able to be prosecuted for doing something that is your best decision or your choice. I'm just at a loss for words, and it's just really disheartening. And I think there's a lot of things broken in America, and this is huge. And I don't think that they're going to stop at abortion rights. I think they are going to continue down the line of other issues that are near and dear to my heart and to the people that I love. And I'm not okay with that either. I think there needs to be a big change. And I unfortunately don't have confidence in the Democrats that are sitting in their seats on the Hill to fight for us and advocate and do something to make this better or what's next. You know, I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel with this.
I am truly upset to my stomach about the Supreme Court overturning Roe versus Wade. I don't understand a country that can stop one woman from having one unwanted pregnancy, no matter the reason, yet we continue to arm people who murder years, children, yet we still arm people who murder hundreds, if not thousands, of children a year. It just does not make sense to me. I was born and raised a Catholic. Abortions were not accepted by the Catholic Church. Although I knew this, and I never thought I would ever want an abortion, I supported those who saw that as what they needed to do. I often wonder about that child that was aborted, if that mother was made to have that baby. Who's going to help that young lady or older lady take care of that baby? Who's going to pay the medical bills? Who's going to help with the formula, the diapers? What about when the child goes to school? And before that, where's the child care? Where's the after school care? Where's all the help and support that a young mother needs? Is the government going to step in and help them now? Or are they going to care about that mother or the baby then? And just to talk about adoption, so many people are, well, you can always give the baby up for adoption. You still have to be pregnant for 9 months. You still have to go to the doctor. And what if you don't get to be pregnant for 9 months? What if something goes terribly wrong and you and or the baby has to be hospitalized for weeks, if not months? Who's going to pay for that? Yes, adoption is wonderful, and I don't have anything against it. But I watch enough television, and I actually know some children who were adopted and who are now adults. Many of those children still have emotional issues about being unwanted. They wonder why their mom gave them away. This is a mental health issue in many ways. And those children that were given up for adoption, even if they were given to the most loving and wonderful family, do they get care, medical assistance for their emotional behavior? I'm very confused and do not understand how these seated Supreme Court justices have nothing better to do than to overturn Roe versus Wade. My biggest fear is what next? Are we going to overturn same-sex marriages? Are we going to overturn biracial marriages? Where are we going?
Enraged by the overturning of Roe versus Wade, and my rage goes in so many different directions because I don't believe anyone has the right to tell any individual what to do with their body. I don't care about your religion. I don't care about your beliefs. That applies to you and you alone, and that should not dictate how someone else has to live their life. I'm enraged because I'm someone who has had to have a DNC after a miscarriage and had to have the pregnancy tissue removed from my body to prevent infection. Now that is in jeopardy. That sort of procedure is in jeopardy because of this. And I'm enraged because I feel like this opens the door, endangering the rights of so many other populations, poor women, black and brown women. Same-sex marriage feels now like in danger. And it's all just sick and selfish, and we are going backwards, and it's absolutely disgusting. And I'm committed to doing whatever I can to stop the madness.
So my thoughts on how Roe versus Wade was overturned this week. It's very offensive. It's insulting. I feel like overall, as a woman, my rights in this country have been taken away and are under assault. It's really enraging to think that there are other people making decisions about what women can do with their bodies. More importantly, it's this, I feel like there's this ever-present conversation, right, around, you know, this right to life and from the Republican side, of course, this right to life and how a baby is a life that should be protected. But as a person in this world, I see every day, particularly as a person of color, I see every day how there is no true protection for others who look like me once they become adults. So if there's really this protection of life, right, this protection of life and it mattering, shouldn't Black lives matter too? Is it just that we need to care about those lives once they're in a womb? It really just doesn't make sense to me. It was just something that really hurt me when I heard it today. I couldn't understand why this was something that needed to be overturned and how now constitutionally is not something that's protected federally. And states are going to be able to make decisions around whether or not women can have the right to abortion. And I just recognize how some states, I'm determining whether or not I would really want to live there. As much as I want to move out of my own state, I have to be very careful about where I live now, because it's very possible that I could live in a state that would make it so that my rights and my decisions about my body will be non-existent. And that's just something that I can't imagine is even happening in this country at this time. It's so weird. I was just telling someone earlier today that this decision very much reminds me of what was going on in portions of The Handmaid's Tale when they went back in time and you got to see how they got to the point of where they were. It was these slow things that started to happen, right? People in leadership who were supporting or I'm sorry, people in general who were supporting a leader such as like Trump and some of the decisions that he's made, or people who have decisions and positions on things that don't really care about anything that isn't related to those strong conservative Christian values. I'm upset. I'm concerned about not just my own rights, but then now what kind of rights will be taken away next? You know, will they decide they want to take away Brown versus Board of Education? And next thing you know, we'll all be segregated again in our places of school and education and where we work. You know, what type of rights are going to be okay for people who aren't heterosexual? It's unfortunate. It's hurtful. As a woman, I really, again, feel attacked. I feel like I live in a place where my voice doesn't matter. And what I think is important is we need to help people understand that this is why voting is important. Because it's not just about the judges and the fact that they're the ones making the decisions. But when we elect certain people into elected offices, like the president, those are the individuals who are appointing the justices in place that make decisions that now affect everybody else. So again, how I'm feeling today, just very hurt, upset, enraged, and overall just disappointed in this country that's supposed to protect us and have protections for me, because I definitely don't feel protected.
So as a person with a uterus who lives in Texas, the overturning of Roe v. Wade is very terrifying. The thought of doing prison time because of an abortion is insane. Because of this, people will die, and trauma in lives, families, and communities will worsen. It's hard to know what to do to move forward as we continue to fight. If I can leave anything here, I want everyone to remember that this conversation includes more than just women, but also trans men and non-binary people. If you don't have a uterus, please speak up and speak out, because we will need everyone we can. And if you are in a place where you can donate, try to focus on the ground organizations that are helping red state people receive travel and access to get safe abortions.
Devastated doesn't even begin to describe how I feel about the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Limitations and outright bans on abortion put every single person who is capable of getting pregnant at risk. An exception when the mother's life is at risk isn't sufficient when doctors have to deal with vague language and additional hoops to jump through when time is of the essence, knowing that they will be expected to prove that there was no other option and face a hefty fine, losing their license and jail time every time they choose to save the mother. If a rape victim is lucky enough to live in one of the 5 states where there are exceptions for rape victims, they will be stripped of their autonomy once more by being forced to go to police, being re-traumatized in the interrogation process, and accused of lying for the sake of getting an abortion. How will they be able to prove that they got raped in time to get an abortion when less than 3% of sexual assaults result in a felony conviction? No form of birth control is perfect, and even tubal ligations and vasectomies can fail, with the former being near impossible to access for those seeking it out, especially if they are unmarried and or childless. And yet, our country has no problem sterilizing Black, Indigenous, and other women of color without their consent or knowledge. Abstinence only works if men respect our bodily autonomy, and we all know how often that works out. We are never safe, and no amount of responsible choices will guarantee our fate. It's a scary time to be an American, and it's important to accept that no hero is going to swoop in from the sky to save us. We have to do that ourselves. While Hollywood has taught us that it's one particularly brave hero who brings about change, the reality is that radical change comes from individual acts of civil disobedience and from communities organizing to protect each other. Rarely the kind of stories that make history books. There are many leaders across the country who have been warning and preparing for this moment for years, who are already organizing with a plan in place to get things done. What we need now more than anything are followers who are willing to listen, take directions, and get to work. Change isn't glamorous or romantic, but it is possible. There's work that can be done, and the battle is not over until we say it is.
Okay, so as someone who is definitely pro-choice and 1,000% believes that a woman should do whatever the hell she wants to with her body, I also, just at the risk of being devil's advocate, want to be perfectly clear about what happened in the Supreme Court. They did not ban abortion, but what they did do is still devastating in its own right. But what they did do is put the choice back into the state to decide. So As much as we are all pissed off and posting on social media, let's be very clear that that is actually not going to affect any change. And now more than ever, because it is no longer a federal issue, it has become a state issue. It is now more important than ever for us, each and every one of us who is outraged, to get our asses out and vote. Because now more than ever, who we are putting into office locally will affect change on this issue specifically and several other issues that unfortunately our super conservative Supreme Court is probably going to overturn as well. So I'm pissed off just like everyone else, but use that fury to get everyone you know out to the voting polls for every election. Primary, midterm, every single election matters now more than ever.
I am completely horrified by the overturning of the Roe versus Wade. It's like we are going back into Handmaid's Tale in this country. And it seems as though everyone's big concern is the unborn child. My concern is the born child. Do these people that made these decisions have a plan in place to make sure that these kids have food and shelter and a plan for their life, for education and all else? I doubt it. I hardly think they even thought of it.
What I thought when I heard that Roe versus Wade was overturned, I would say I was angry, disgusted, and disappointed. I think that it's alarming and everybody should be alarmed. I don't feel that the Supreme Court represents the majority in the United States. Clearly, I think that it's okay to have your opinion on a matter, but we should never be in a place where someone can tell you what you can and can't do with your body. It's unsettling. So I just feel as though we are moving backwards as a country. I think this is a call to action for people to wake up, for people to organize, for people to really become active in their communities to make changes. People grow. I think that this country is not the same country from when the Constitution was written. So why can't we look to change the Constitution? It just doesn't make sense to follow things that have been in place for so long, and then it's left up to a few people to decide what's constitutional and what's not. It's just bizarre. So overall, I am saddened, disgusted again, but not surprised at all. And that's how I feel.
Devastated doesn't even begin to describe how I feel about the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Limitations and outright bans on abortion put every single person who is capable of getting pregnant at risk. An exception when the mother's life is at risk isn't sufficient when doctors have to deal with vague language and additional hoops to jump through when time is of the essence, knowing that they will be expected to prove that there was no other option and face a hefty fine, losing their license and jail time every time they choose to save the mother. If a rape victim is lucky enough to live in one of the 5 states where there are exceptions for rape victims, they will be stripped of their autonomy once more by being forced to go to police, being re-traumatized in the interrogation process, and accused of lying for the sake of getting an abortion. How will they be able to prove that they got raped in time to get an abortion when less than 3% of sexual assaults result in a felony conviction? No form of birth control is perfect, and even tubal ligations and vasectomies can fail, with the former being near impossible to access for those seeking it out, especially if they are unmarried and or childless. And yet, our country has no problem sterilizing Black, Indigenous, and other women of color without their consent or knowledge. Abstinence only works if men respect our bodily autonomy, and we all know how often that works out. We are never safe, and no amount of responsible choices will guarantee our fate. It's a scary time to be an American, and it's important to accept that no hero is going to swoop in from the sky to save us. We have to do that ourselves. While Hollywood has taught us that it is one particularly brave hero who brings about change, the reality is that radical change comes from individual acts of civil disobedience and from communities organizing to protect each other. Rarely the kind of stories that make history books. There are many leaders across the country who have been warning and preparing for this moment for years, who are already organizing with a plan in place to get things done. What we need now more than anything are followers who are willing to listen, take directions, and get to work. Change isn't glamorous or romantic, but it is possible. There's work that can be done, and the battle is not over until we say it is.
The reversal of Roe versus Wade has set us back 50 years. It's a loss for women, women everywhere. No one, especially a man, should have the authority to tell a woman what she can or cannot do with her body. But this is America.
Hey, Bryce. It's Summer from Dallas. I'm ashamed to admit in my late teens and early 20s, I thought abortion was primarily for those who were irresponsible and should have made better decisions. Sure, exemptions existed, but they were few and far between. I'm so thankful as I got older, started listening to other people's stories, I found some damn empathy and grew the fuck up. This is real life. Abortion is part of real life. So this decision to overturn Roe versus Wade, my first thought was of my daughter, Charlie B, who's 11. But let's be real. We have means. She's white. If we need to get a hotel room in another side of the country and get stuff done, we can get it done. For so many people, that just isn't the case. They don't have the resources. They don't have the family support. We have to be that family support. No one is coming to save us. It's on us now. We're going to work together as communities all over this country and make sure that it's not as simple as just saying no. On an unrelated note, if anybody needs any special camping gear, I'm easy to find. Thank you for this space, Bryce. We love you.
What is there to say about the overturning of Roe v. Wade that probably hasn't already been said? As a woman, it's completely heartbreaking and disheartening. Never did I think I would live in a time to see history go backwards, live in a time where the government is telling women what they can do with their bodies and why they can make certain decisions for their bodies. As a social worker, I don't even want to begin to think about the implications this may have. I do not believe that the government should be able to make those decisions for women and for their bodies. And what I can say is, although this is such a disappointing week in our history, we need to continue to use our voices to stand up for the things we believe. And it's even more important that we go out and make informed decisions and vote for political leaders in our local governments, in our state governments, and at the federal level that stand for issues that we believe in.
Abortions are not just an option for women who don't want a baby. Abortions can be medically, emotionally, physically, mentally, and financially necessary. I have taken care of women who've made the decision to have an abortion for those reasons and many more as a woman's health nurse. So for the ones who voted to overturn Roe v. Wade and the ones who support it, you are ignorant, you lack compassion, and you lack empathy. And who are you to make a choice for a woman?
I am not surprised. I am not surprised, but I am angry. As a person who has studied politics and public policy for 2 decades, the Supreme Court overturning Roe versus Wade has been a matter of when, in my mind, not if. And with Trump's 2016 election, the matter became a certainty. Seeing all of these events unfold has been like watching a train crash in ultra slow motion. While half of the spectators look on and cheer, the inevitable carnage and loss of life guaranteed at the end. The people of this nation have been failed by a system purporting for the last 50 years to have everything under control. No way Roe will get overturned on our watch, thought the now dumbstruck politicians that many Americans look to for comfort at times like these. Well, I'll be honest. I haven't found a single thing any politician has said to be comforting, and I bet that I'm not alone in feeling this way. So I'm angry, as many others rightfully are. I'm so angry that I'm tired of holding on to that feeling. Many will say that the question now is how not to let our incredibly justified anger or frustration or feelings of hopelessness or helplessness calcify inside ourselves and make us into cynics, resigned to our fate and loath to get involved. And that is true to a point. But I'm real enough to say that some people just don't have the energy for action yet. And I'm here to say that it's okay if you need a minute to process what's happening to this country. It's okay not to have all of the words at the ready to express how you feel and what steps you're going to take next. Our society so rewards constant motion that the idea that something so big could just leave us shaken to our core and at this state of shock does not compute. Whatever feelings you are feeling are valid. It's okay if you need a moment before running to the next march or the next rally. In fact, taking care of yourself at this point in human history is a radical act, especially when our government has told us their method of taking care of us, and it's scary as hell. So take a breath, and then when you're ready, find the type of action that's right for you. You can write letters to your local or national congresspeople, support Planned Parenthood in states where abortion will not be banned. Check your language. This isn't just a matter of women's rights, and this is a mistake I've made myself. It's an issue of human rights and bodily autonomy for any person who can get pregnant. Fight for the abortion drug mifepristone to stay legal in your state, because 50% of abortions are not surgical. They are done using this drug. Share the underground methods of obtaining safe and legal abortions with anyone you know who needs it, and make sure they call out of state and get an appointment first and foremost, and then direct them to the various organizations that pay for people to travel to other states to obtain abortions. And protest if you can, and if you are able. This is an issue that we, the people, are going to have to grapple with, because it is really hard right now to have trust in our institutions now that a watershed event has taken place. Take care of yourselves during this wretched time and check in on those that you love, because the odds are they're feeling too much to properly process too. Just remember that while everyone was hit by this, it hits everyone different.
Hi, everyone. I'm Nicole Sesternino, and I'm really honored to be here talking on the Purple Pants podcast about the Supreme Court decision overturning Roe versus Wade. And I'm here to bring a different perspective. I'm a neonatal intensive care nurse for the past 15 years, and it's important to understand that a woman's decision is based on a woman's decision and her medical team. And it's complex, and it's not black and white. And the courtroom has no place in making this decision for a woman. I've never had to make the decision to terminate a pregnancy, but there have been times that I've relied on the comfort of knowing that if I had to, I could. And many of those times I probably would have, and I wouldn't be able to tell my Catholic mother. Now, I am a mother. I have miscarried a pregnancy that my body wouldn't let go of. And for my health, I had a DNC to remove an 8-week embryo without cardiac activity from my body. And this is now illegal in some states. This is illegal in some states. That is a sentence I do not understand. I have two beautiful, healthy boys that I love beyond words, and I am so lucky. You're going to hear a lot of stories very similar to mine, and some with far more trauma and heartbreak and spoken so much more eloquently. But what I am here to tell you are the stories you don't hear about. For 15 years, I worked as a neonatal intensive care nurse. I took care of the babies of the mothers who made a well-informed choice. They knew the risks and they made their decision and we respected it. But now in many states, there is no choice. And these stories will now become the fate of women that no longer have a choice. And this will be their forced life. I've taken care of babies from the women who were told they can never get pregnant. The miracle pregnancies that are abruptly halted because much like they were told, their uterus can't hold a pregnancy. They hold on to the hope and they pray for a miracle, but their baby is born at just 23 weeks gestation. That's the threshold for viability. Their precious baby is born. Her eyes are still fused. Her skin is transparent and gelatinous. Her lungs are incapable of breathing on their own as they're nowhere near fully developed. I've pressed on the chest of these babies trying to bring life into their delicate, tiny, 500 gram bodies as their mothers watched. I've succeeded and I've failed. I've watched the hope fill a mother's eyes and I've watched it leave moments, days, weeks, and even months later. I've heard mothers scream in agony as their tiny miracle left this earth. I've watched her live the worst day of her life, traumatized and broken. She is left to leave the hospital without her baby in her arms or in her belly. If the baby does survive the birth, and oftentimes because of science they do, it is not without consequence. Despite my formal nursing education and specialized didactic training in neonatal intensive care nursing to care for these extremely low birth weight babies born between 23 and 28 weeks gestation, additional specialized training is required to care for these babies in most hospitals. I underwent this training, and I understood the complexities in caring for these tiny babies. One small, incorrect movement can cause anything from a broken bone to an intraventricular hemorrhage, a bleed in the brain causing a multitude of severe problems. For 2 weeks, parents cannot hold their babies. The baby breathes with full support of a ventilator. Numerous IV drips and nutrition keep the baby alive and growing. They are monitored closely, and touching is minimized to reduce traumatic stress to the baby. Their hearts have a tiny hole that usually closes when they're born at full term. But oftentimes, this hole causes a sudden drop in oxygen levels, resulting in oxygen deprivation to the baby's body. This hole can require many rounds of medication that requires strict surveillance because it can cause their intestines to rupture and the surrounding tissue to die. If this happens, it can be catastrophic. The intestines could also just spontaneously rupture and cause the surrounding tissue to die just because it's not fully developed or mature enough to tolerate feedings. I have had to call parents in the middle of the night to get to the hospital right away. I've seen the fear in their eyes knowing that this could be it for their baby. This could be it for their little family. This could be it for their hopes and their dreams. And I sat with them as they waited for the surgery to end. And I've held their hands as they shook because they knew their fate. I watched as they got the news and I watched their heart break into a million little pieces, never to be whole again. This trauma will now be forced upon so many women. Forced trauma. Forced heartbreak. Let me repeat that. Forced. I have taken care of babies who no longer have mothers. Their mothers died during labor or shortly thereafter. Most knowing the risks, but chose to hold on to hope. I've watched a husband fall to his knees and wail as he watched the life leave his wife's body. I've watched a pregnant mother in active labor, in full conversation, and within a blink of an eye, her heart stopped. I watched the doctors and nurses perform CPR while simultaneously scrambled to save the baby's life. I will never forget the screams and the pain that I witnessed that night. I saw that beautiful baby's face frequently in my mind. And in the days to come, I held her. I watched her smile and I fed her. I helped her grow. She was there
in that incubator alone because seeing her was too much for her father to bear. And we understood. So we stepped in and we gave her love. I have held babies born addicted to drugs for 12 hours straight and attempts to console them as they withdrew. I gave them methadone or morphine every 3 hours to ease the withdrawal symptoms. These babies scream like no baby should. They shake. Their eating is dysregulated. They sweat. They have explosive diarrhea. They are born addicted to drugs, and their tiny bodies are begging for more. They suffer. Most of these babies will have various degrees of developmental and behavioral problems, and most will struggle in school, at home, and in life. Some will enter the foster care system that is already broken. The lucky ones, they will get adopted by loving parents who have the resources to provide them with early intervention and therapies that they need to thrive. I have taken care of the babies who were born to die. Genetic anomalies not compatible with life. I have held these babies as they took their last breath because it was too much for their parents to watch. I've rocked them to a peaceful forever sleep. I've been screamed at by parents because they need someone to be angry at. I've dressed babies in gowns and wrapped them in blankets made by their grandmas so mom could have a moment to remember her baby as her baby and not a baby that was born to die. I have cried with mothers that watched the life leave their babies' bodies. I've prayed with them. I've cried with mothers that realize their fate as they take their premature baby home that has had a brain bleed that now has various degrees of cerebral palsy. I've held the hand of mothers who take home the baby with a trach so they can breathe and live at home. I've watched teenage mothers walk out and leave, never to return, because caring for their premature baby with special needs is far more than they can handle. I've seen mothers come back to the hospital, family reunions, exhausted from their around-the-clock care of their now four-year-old. I've seen them come alone because their marriage cannot survive the stress of their new life. I've seen hope completely disintegrate before my eyes. I've seen hope fill a mother's eyes and leave days, weeks, months later. I've seen the pain no mother should be forced to feel. I see these faces when it's quiet, when I close my eyes. I see them in my dreams. And sometimes the screams, they wake me up in the middle of the night. I think of the low-income families who don't have the resources to provide the early intervention, therapies, and care for these special need babies, or a voice to stand up for the needs of their babies. Women of color, they're already at higher risk for maternal death and premature birth. And I have seen this truth with my own eyes. This percentage is now estimated to increase by 33%. And this makes me angry. But while I tell you these stories of heartbreak, I must also mention the happy endings that do occur. They do. I've watched miracles happen right before my eyes. And this is what kept me going as a nurse. Those are the ones I have to remember day to day. The success stories and the miracle babies. They make me smile and fill my heart with hope that I am making a difference in this world. And any NICU nurse will tell you the same thing. But it is a real roll of the dice, and no woman should be forced to make that gamble. Thank you, Bryce, for giving me this opportunity to share my story that I feel really needs to be heard.
It's a man who, it's a man you. Me and potatoes like we're cooking up a great stew. It's a man who, it's a man you. Me and potatoes like we're cooking up a great stew.
And we are back this week with your P-Valley Season 2 recap, Episode 4, Demetrius. And I am joined by none other than the co-host of Nothing But Netflix, even though I feel like at times he be giving me nothing but BS.
Ah,
It's the one, the only. Is it a first name? Is it a last name? We don't know. But it's Chappelle. Welcome back to the podcast, Chappelle.
Thank you for having me back, Bryce. If I didn't learn anything last week listening to the podcast, I definitely learned that y'all don't give a damn about people's names because y'all did not get nobody's name right on the show. You definitely called me by six different names as well. I'm just Chappelle. It's all you need to know. It's just Chappelle.
Listen, it's a plethora of things in here at the podcast. Names don't mean much. It's descriptions. Okay.
The Chappelle and or Brandon, the king of BS. I'll take it.
Yes. Okay. And we are back with episode 4, and it is a good one. I feel like P-Valley is starting to they are turning their juices on, and it's really good. P-Valley, this episode starts off where, listen, you think that pink is just for men, and it's not. Okay. The ladies can come and be patrons too and have an amazing time. I do feel like when you have these lady patrons that come to the P, you need to be careful. You need to make sure that you are following all of the codes and following all of the rules, that the ordinance that Chuckalisa puts in place, because it is important.
Yeah, Bryce, I was in a club, not this kind of, just a nightclub one time in college. And I remember, like, I was in there and I was tearing up the soul food buffet. Like, they had, like, this very prominent buffet. And I was, like, tearing it up. And the next day I go to class because I was in school, and this woman walks up to me, one of my classmates, and she says, I saw you in the club last night. And my first instinct was, oh, you work at the club? You work at the Peak? And she was like, no, fool, I was there as a patron. I was, oh, okay. She said, you was tearing them damn greens up. She wasn't wrong. So I was not shocked to see this woman in the club, you know, showing love to the dancers. She was making it rain. She was trying to blow that whole entire stimulus check in one day. But Bryce, when they took off her mask and the face shield and the mask and the double mask, like, and for Toy to sneeze in that woman's mouth, Bryce, I was almost fell on the floor. Like, during COVID, Bryce, I would have had to rip my face off.
And she turned from patron to code inspector real quick. And she shut down the pink. She was there. I mean, first of all, was this a work trip? Because if so, I think we need the number to your supervisor, because you definitely were getting the pink experience. And I knew she looked familiar, and essentially she effectively shut down the pink because they were not following the mask ordinance. They were not following operating at 50%. They were not following the little plastic shields that we know don't really do much if they don't go to ceiling to floor, but they didn't have a lot of the stuff that they were supposed to have. So she effectively cut the pink down, and they were going to have to pay $25,000 as a violation. But how did they get that violation down, Chappelle?
They realized this woman was in that messy divorce, and so it turns out that she was cheating on her husband with the mama or something like that. So this lady, she been doing her own dirt. Honestly, Bryce, I'm with you. You can't snitch on us without me snitching on you. You was in here partying and pee popping and everything with everybody else. Why you get to snitch now that you got your mouth sneezed in? Like, I understand why you're upset, but let's not get carried away, lady. So you're going to need to lower that fine.
Yeah. And I'm just confused. Is this how you conduct all your inspections?
you got to get, like, in the real experience, Bryce. You can't just, like, go in and walk around. You got to see what it's like to really be a patron of the club. So I don't mind her getting, you know, into the nitty gritty and, like, really experiencing the strip club. She's in the back room where, you know, you probably need to buy a wristband to get back there or something. You know, she was doing everything it took to get the best analysis of the pink. She was going to turn a blind eye until she got her mouth spat in.
We now know what Chappelle.
We don't know nothing about Chappelle. We don't know nothing about Chappelle. This episode ain't got nothing to do with me.
You need to be the cold violation inspector for nightclubs.
I ain't never been no snitch. I'm sorry.
And that's where I thought you was going when you was talking about the buffet and the club and the green story. I was like, oh my God, were they not keeping the greens at 350 degrees?
No, them greens was good as hell. Shout out to, was it Legends? good as hell.
The real question is, did they have the turkey neck bone in them?
Oh, you know it. You know it. Yeah, listen, I ain't eating no greens. If I, like, this straight greens, or y'all got a little extra in there. You know what I'm saying?
Listen, you need a good turkey neck, okay? A smoked turkey neck at that. It can't just be a regular turkey neck. Yeah, it has to be a smoked.
They show love at Legends. It's definitely not open now due to some ghetto nonsense that happened way back when. But we move. It's not neither here nor there.
R.I.P. And so the pink has 24 hours to get these filters, to get the plastic, and to be up and running. When the girls go back into the back room, because now they're upset at the girl who sneezed. There's another girl that basically, Roulette is somewhat upset. And she's like, why are you looking at me? And the girl like, I don't know why you upset, because we heard you have a diverse stream of income.
Mm-hmm. She's been doing a little extra behind the scenes. We saw last episode. They were commenting on her lips. She was using her lips accordingly. We don't shame sex workers here on the Purple Pants podcast, but in the pink, it is frowned upon to do sexual acts with people. It's just straight dancing and that's it. And so, Roulette was in the wrong, but she also liked to fight. So she was really ready to call out Brazil and her fake belly button. Did you catch that? She said that belly button looking kind of weird, though. So it looked like Brazil didn't have some work done, which we don't shame either. But Roulette was ready to go there. Bryce, did you recognize Roulette from other TV shows?
So this is what I actually wrote a name down. I don't know if I recognize her, but I know from Flavor of Love season one, she definitely looks like Bucky.
A little bit. She do have some Bucky Shea Johnson to her, but Bryce, I know you watched Insecure. That's Rashida, the ghetto girl that got fired. They got fired for being too hood.
Ah!
Molly tried to pull it to the side. I was like, hey, Rashida, we don't really do that here. She was like, girl, I don't need your help. They hired me when they knew who I was. Next thing you know, we seen her in the room getting pulled to the side. Look at Rashida out here getting work.
And now, listen, she done left corporate America for the king.
About to get fired from there, too. She better act right.
Listen, then Big Al pulls her into the office. And we kind of sort of have this, like, random moment where it's like, I don't tell if you don't tell. Because we know last week that Big Al saw her coming out of a car. And she saw Big Al dropping the Percocets. But even before the blackmailing starts, Big Al really is like, I felt like he turned into Matt and Mari and was like, that was a wrestling move. How you learn that wrestling move? The under throat cut thing. And she's like, my brother. And so we see her trying to sort of get deep. Maybe there is a more story to the brother, but we don't really necessarily get there. But I did like the fact that Big Al, like, pulling her to the side and basically, like, instead of being like, oh, you about to get in trouble for fighting, he tried to kind of sort of like, I saw that move. Where you learn that from? And, like, you know, she's like, this ain't no therapy session.
Yeah, he told her, I peeped the dragon sleeper. Clearly you learned that from your brother. But he tells her, like, take a lesson from the dragon sleeper. In order to reverse it, you have to get back on top. And she said, don't be the finessed, be the finesser. And so he's trying to give her some words of wisdom, because they both doing dirt. Big L's doing dirt, Roulette's doing dirt. But, you know, that brother's like line is really going to be something that looms throughout the episode, because we're going to see her have to deal with that later on.
Yes. And then we saw last week Pastor Woodbine, her church got shut down by the interim mayor. And she said to him, if you are telling me I effed with the wrong neighbor, then you effed with the wrong lady. And we see the commercial for Pastor Woodbine is running for mayor.
Yeah, she's thrown her hat into the ring for this one. I mean, they've been hinting at it that either her or Uncle Cliff or somebody from the neighborhood was about to try to get in on this mayor race. And so it's clear that Pastor Woodbine thinks that she has another calling. She said, hell to the nah for this casino. And so, that's her next move. Will that work out for her? I don't know if I want that. I don't know if Pastor Woodbine is somebody I would trust with running my city, but I don't think they can trust Mayor Kyle right now either.
Well, listen, this is what I would say. Like, I feel like there are a lot of mayors that do a lot of shady stuff. I feel like Chuck Alisa's past mayor was not the most upfront and stand-up guy. And although for me, I'd be I try to take Mercedes out of the conversation when it comes to Pastor Woodbine, because that is Mercedes' mom, and she did steal Mercedes' money to get this church rent that she has. But if we did not know that, I mean, is she not for the people outside of that?
I don't know. I mean, she's doing some big things. I mean, people who are for the church normally are for the people. They kind of have to be in a way. But I don't know. Like, just it's really hard to separate the Mercedes parts of it, you know, like, other than the Mercedes thing, we really haven't seen her like do anything reckless to anybody else. I mean, she gets into some heated arguments and fights with the church people, but you know, she's really just trying to stand her ground and make sure she's standing in that community
and standing for women's rights in the Black church community. So again, I say, outside of us knowing the intimate details of her and Mercedes, listen, Pastor Woodbine might get a vote for me.
Look, the question, I guess, is it selfish or is it Pastor Woodbine standing up for, you know, like what she knows is right as a Black woman or as a woman in the church? Or is Pastor Woodbine just thinking that she needs to be at the top, right? Because she was willing to step all over Mercedes to get there. And so that's why I'm kind of like, if it's selfish, then, you know, we got to look at Pastor Woodbine like we look at the rest of these politicians. But I don't think she's out of the running by any means.
I mean, no, not at all. And I think she might have a good shot. We see Mercedes last week. She done signed the NDA. She was on the pole in the middle of a threesome. And her daughter called and she had to leave. She got a text message from the coach saying, I'm going to be in town today and you got work to finish.
Yeah, you got to finish that Mercedes experience eventually. but Bryce, do you want to jump right to what that experience was on this episode?
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us, what was it, Chappelle? Because I'm sure you is excited to want to jump there. So let's jump on in.
Listen, the coach's wife she looked good. It was like any content with the coach's wife, I'm like, oh, well, let's talk about it. But Mercedes shows up to greet the coach. She basically disrobes at the door because she know what the F is going on. But she finds out that it's the coach's wife who's there instead. At first, the lady's like, hey, I just came to get my photography stuff. I'm about to go. But after a conversation with Mercedes, it's very clear that the coach still kind of wants to talk about the events of last time, like what happened with the threesome and why Mercedes had to leave. And so they kind of bond a little bit up to the point where she ends up taking pictures of Mercedes on the pole. And kind of admiring her beauty and her strength and you know, just being able to take photographs of her in that moment seems like something that Mercedes is really enjoying. Now, it does take a turn very quickly when it's now time for Mrs. Coach to climb the pole herself. She now wants to like kind of try it out. She's taking off her clothes. Mercedes is taking off her clothes for her, you know, and so it's getting very intimate very quickly to the point where Mercedes is even helping her release her twerk muscles, which I ain't never heard it put like that before, but I definitely wrote it down. and which leads to the two of them kind of having a moment. And we find out that, yeah, Coach never texted Mercedes to tell her to come over. It was always Coach's wife. She's been basically enamored with Mercedes and her ability to be a boss and to kind of like own her own life and to not be reliant on, you know, her husband to make these decisions. She appreciates Mercedes' strength and she's attracted to it. She liked what she sees and she wanted it. And so they get it in.
Oh, that they do. And Mercedes wakes up to the 10 stacks on the side of the bed. And it's interesting because now it's like, you know, last episode, the coach's wife was like, you know, you didn't need my permission. Why did you want my permission? And Mercedes is like, it's rules to this. And, you know, now it's interesting because it's like, okay, well, do the same rules apply now that you are kind of sort of like cheating with the, you are now supposed to be the mistress of the husband, but now you are sneaking behind the husband's back and being the lady to the lady.
Yeah, and that's something I honestly didn't think about is like, what does the coach say when he finds out? Because I the coach's wife was very forgiving about the Mercedes thing. Like, I think she knows the game at this point. They've been together for a long time. She knows he's gonna have.
She knows.
Yeah, they got NDAs. She know the game, but you know that double standard with women and men is so strong. I could see a world where the coach is like not okay with this at
right.
all. Like, it's cool if I'm there, but it's not cool if I'm not there. Right. And so I think that might come into play at some point.
Yeah, but also very important, her body, her choice. So it really doesn't matter about you, coach, because you was willing to step out and cheat. So if that's what your wife want to do with the person that you was supposed to cheat with, she can do that.
Exactly. But yeah, so that's how Mercedes kind of leaves that moment. And I guess we're left to find out later on if that's something that's going to come back to bite her. But I think the next scene before we got into Mercedes in that text message was Mississippi, right? And yes, her and her influencer stuff with her lashes and all that stuff, Bryce.
Yes, and the Dirty Dozen tour continues. That's the reason why Brandon was not here last week. He was absolutely at the first stop of the Dirty Dozen tour.
In the back room with the wristband.
Okay, with his glasses and grills on. He was there. The Dirty Dozen tour continues. Keyshawn, Mississippi, her endorsement deals continue to flourish. She is at one of the hood hair stores with her new lashes. She's excited. We get to see that her girlfriend and fan favorite, aka Chappelle favorite, Gidget returns for a cameo episode to show her love, Keyshawn, some support. And it seems that, you know, we talked about this in the first episode of the season two recap, is that one thing that we really love about The Pink was that one that I don't love is that it took almost a year and a half, 2 years for them to get this season. They had to stop because of COVID and a lot of other things. And I really like that a lot of the things that we all experience in our own life during the pandemic, during the social injustice that this country went through and is still going through, you know, we went through that. And I love to see it reflected in The Pink because they are on their way, the Dirty Dozen tour. I don't know if it's Alabama or another.
Yeah, they're going to Birmingham.
Birmingham. And there happens to be a police shooting. And the city, or the South, or the country in general, is rioting. Just like when we had our civil unrest in 2020, where every city, every major city in the United States was protesting. There were a lot of bloodshed. And that is seeming to what is happening on this tour that we don't really know much of. We haven't really gotten a lot of the details, but we know that it has been off-railing the tour. And it really seems that Big T, who is what we thought was Lil Murda's brother or cousin.
Yeah, we're going to get into that.
We is going to get into it. while he was in jail, like, you know, now that he's out and Lil Murda is providing him with a job. But he really seems to be preoccupied with the news and wanting to hear the news and wanting to know what's going on. For me, it almost was giving like PTSD, how just engaged that he was. Anytime somebody cut the radio off, he ready to fight. He wants to hear everything that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, but that's so relatable. I remember, and I say remember like it happens a long time ago, but this happens all the time, where something like egregious happens on the news or something, and then it's like your whole timeline is just engulfed with it. It's everywhere, and you're reading it, and you're trying to get all the information, and you're sitting on the edge of your seat because all this stuff is unfolding, and you can't turn it off. But there are also times where you don't want it to be your whole day, right? You don't want to have to carry that all day. But I know those moments where it's like, oh, here it is again. Here's that same pain. That's those same feelings of when it happened last time. And I mean, we don't know a lot about Big Teak, but we know he was in prison at a time. So he's probably heard his fair share of stories or know people who have gone through stuff with the police where there is a lack of trust there. I mean, like I said, even in my life, I just know that like when this stuff happens, it hurts so bad to hear about it because of like my personal experiences with it, my friends and family and stuff like that. So it's like, yeah, he's completely involved in it, and everybody is not having the same reaction. I mean, we see Rome, Mississippi's manager, basically being like, well, what'd he do to get the police in his life? Like, how? We ain't even asked what he did to bring this upon himself. And Big T can't even like fathom that this man is bringing that up, because we see so many times where the police get away with crimes like this. I mean, with essentially doing things and just getting off. I mean, you could be recorded and the police officer just still get away with it. And So he's not dealing with it well. It doesn't help that Gidget is there either, like also not caring as much as he is. And so there's a lot going on in the car. Gidget and Rome don't really care that much. Wodey is trying to keep everybody together. And Mississippi is kind of on the same page as Teak. She's feeling the effects of all of this. But she's kind of trying to deal with Gidget being there and try, like, how do we talk about this in front of her? So it's so much going on in this scene. I really liked it.
Yeah, no. And I mean, listen, let's just get to the juicy, juicy part. So the tour, they put in a curfew that where they're going, everyone has to be in at 8 p.m. And so that clearly means there is no Dirty Dozen stop there. And so one of the gentlemen in the car is like, well, listen, we still going to have a kickback at the hotel and we just still going to make the best of it. So they're at the hotel and Little Murder, one of the producers that he was working with in the car, they heard the song on the radio. So Little Murder calls him and is like, what's going on? Like, we hear you on the radio. He like, well, I'm trying to get you on the feature. He like, send me back a verse and I'm gonna get you on. Although I feel like in episode 2 he told that to Little Murder and Little Murder was playing then. So anyway, at the kickback, Big T is sitting in front of the TV while everyone else is, you know, rolling up, drinking a brown liquor, you know, trying to have a good time. And Big T to Little Murder is like, don't you got homework to do? So Little Murder goes and starts recording. And again, Big T is in front of the TV watching it. They are trying to, like, you know, get the vibe of a kickback, and they cut the TV off. And Bay Bay, War World Dirty Dozen happens. And Big T is like really huffing and puffing and really just kind of having a reaction to the fact of like, I'm just minding my business. Why y'all got to turn my TV off? And then, you know, he gets really loud and he gets like very boisterous to the point that, you know, Mississippi, who we know is in an abusive relationship. So we see her having a reaction to this man, kind of sort of flexing. And so Gidget comes into protective mode and it's like, calm down, blah, 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 blah. And Big T is like, not you, the only white person in here. Like, you need to be quiet. So then he focuses his anger towards her. And it's this whole big scene and they have to escort him out of the kickback.
Yeah. He reacts so viscerally in the moment that I don't think they were ready for it. But it also doesn't help that Rome, Mississippi's manager, is just, he's doing that thing where, I don't know if he's playing devil's advocate, but he's not looking at the situation in the same way Tika is. Tika's saying, this is something we should be upset about. This is something that happens all the time. Aren't you tired? Aren't you angry? Aren't you sad? You know, like, why aren't you feeling this? And Rome is like, I just came here to party and that's it. Like, I just came here to chill. Like, we ain't even talking about this dude and how roguish everybody is being. Why are they burning down their own community? Why are they rioting? Why are they doing all this stuff? Like, this man is clearly, like, he's done something wrong. That's why this happened. And so we see those arguments all the time. I've spent so much of my energy fighting with people on Twitter and stuff before in the past for saying stuff like that. Like, what are you talking about? It don't matter that they're burning down the Safeway or whatever these random, the Rite Aid and all this other stuff. Like, nobody cares. Right. They're trying to get attention for what is happening out here and getting completely brushed under the rug all the time. And so
no
Tika's
justice,
getting
no peace.
Exactly. So Tika's getting angry. Now Gidget should have sat this one out.
I really feel like her heart was in the right place though. I really do feel like she was trying to protect her friend and not realizing that this black man is upset about black lives being lost. And in the moment, she is a white woman telling that, like, you know, like,
telling him to calm down. Yeah.
Telling him to calm down. And it's like almost the worst thing that you can do in that moment.
And so, you know, eventually it leads to Keyshawn basically telling Gidget she got to go. You know, like, she doesn't tell her like in a derogatory way or in a mean way. But eventually we see her walking Gidget to the car because it's gotten heated. And she even says, you can't talk about everything with everybody all the time.
Right.
Because throughout the episode, we've seen Gidget called the pink ghetto, which, coming from a white woman, okay, watch it. You know, but
you work
also,
there, and it's giving you money.
Right, but it's ghetto. But when I can say it's ghetto, you can't say it's ghetto. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so so Gidget saying that, Gidget in the car, jamming to the music when Tika's trying to listen to and feel the actual moment of the protest and the horrible things that happened. And even in this moment, Gidget telling him to calm down when he's clearly emotional about the things that's going on. It's like, Gidget, this might be your time to go. And so I don't know if we're going to see Gidget on the Dirty Dozens tour anymore. But it was happy. We were happy to have her for a short minute. But it was time for her to go on somewhere, Gidget.
It was time for her to go. And Big T returns to the room in which Little Murder is in the bathtub recording a new single. And
his feature for the DJ Never Ready. You know, the feature he's supposed to been done, probably.
The feature he is supposed to been done. Now, Chappelle might have been on the Dirty Dozen tour last week. But listen to the recap. and he listened to Sharia and I talk about the moment that Big T and Little Murder had on the steps, where I thought, I feel like they're trying to show Little Murder like two separate worlds and realms that Little Murder is in. And Brandon called me. He said, that's what you got from that, Spicy? You of all people, that's what you got from that scene? And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? He's like, Spice. And my Brandon Chappelle, that man was hitting on that man. You didn't feel that sexual tension?
Yeah, yeah.
And
y'all listen.
I'm like, well, let me go back and watch it. And I'm like, okay, so yes, I can see the sexual tension, but you know, I don't want to make everything gay love. And I like, you know, I'm trying not to, you know, so I'm like, but also, why can't it just be an intimate moment between bros? But listen. Listen to the sounds here in my heart. Okay. I might have to just say, Chappelle read the room more than I read the room, because yeah. T comes back in that room, Lil Murder in the bathroom, T go pee, and I'm like, well, okay, well, why Lil Murder watching him go pee? Then they get out, and Big T is upset. He is upset, and Lil Murder consoles him. He rubs his head, and I'm still like, okay, brothers can rub their heads. Brothers can, you know, brothers can massage. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. And then Bay Lil Murder. Whew,
he go brothers can the, kiss each other on the forehead.
I like, mean, really? Yes, they can. But I think I draw the line at the brothers kissing and caressing on the lips. Now, first of all, let me just say, I'm here for the scene. I am. Lord knows I do. I love me some Harpo. I do.
Bryce, I kill you dead. You better chill.
Okay. But I'm not here for no sex scene if it ain't Lil Murder and Uncle Cliff.
Yeah, let me go ahead and cut you off there. So that's why you didn't catch it last episode. See, it's not like, oh, well, bros can be intimate. They can have all this price. Let's call it what it is. You see Uncle Cliff and Lil Murder, and you see this love story, and you like, we got to get there. And because I remember a couple podcasts ago, I asked y'all, I said, y'all don't see Uncle Cliff having no room for this other dude, this baby Lil Murder to pop up. They never gonna be nothing. And you immediately said, nope. You said, nope, that's it. Like, you shut it down. And so when you missed that last episode, I was like, oh, Bryce, you got tunnel vision. You looking for the Uncle Cliff love story, but you missing the other dude right there. Because I told you and Sharia, and I text message, I said, look, light-skinned dudes don't care about people like that. They just don't. If they start talking to you like that, looking at you, that man feel it. No, I'm just joking. But anyway, I picked up on it. But what I didn't understand at first was I thought that Teek might have a crush on Lil Murda, right? And I thought that Teek probably knew Lil Murda and Uncle Cliff. Like, he picked up on it. But I didn't know that it was reciprocated. But Lil Murda actually was aggressor, but he was the one who initiated the contact with Teek in this episode. Teek was having his moment. Lil Murda got over there, forehead kissing and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, are they a thing? Were they a thing prior? Were they in jail? What's the levels?
Listen, that first of all, that scene is very intimate. And again, there has to be gay writers on that show, because a couple of things. The way in which they showed this love scene, for me, it was very telling, like, this ain't the first time they done this. And just in the way that Lil Murda knew how to caress him. Now, also, me being very knowledgeable in the...
Not very knowledgeable.
You know.
Okay, right?
The homosexual act of lovemaking.
Bryce, is he out here?
I'm just saying... The Bryce. Way, now, mind you, this might be TMI,
Bryce,
but I'm just
fast.
I'm just
Barb,
I'm
close your ears, Barb.
Not Barb. I'm just saying. So we see Lil Murda grab lube, and you know, lube is for what it's supposed to be for. But again, how I know that there has to be gay writers in this scene is that Lil Murda puts the lube not just where it's supposed to go, but he kind of sort of like shines it around big T's behind. And I'm just like, from what I understand, that's what people do in real life. And I know some people be like, lube ain't cheap, so don't just go be wasting it. But oh, I just, because listen, I'm just saying the water-based lube, from what I hear.
Stop it.
Is, you know, expensive. So at times, people do not like when people use it as baby oil. Like
in a pandemic?
Okay.
So resources are scarce.
We don't have tampons. We don't have baby oil. We don't have lube. Stop with the wasting of the lube.
Oh my God.
But anyway, that for me, that like that little bit of moment, I was just like, oh, okay, there has to be a gay writer to make this scene so real. Now, the "and I whoop" moment was the morning after. How's that Kelly Price song go? As we lay.
Right.
We forgot about the tomorrow. And so, Lil Murda wakes up. Now, mind you, we see somebody sitting in the windowsill. I'm thinking it's the manager that saw Lil Murda with Uncle Cliff. And now the manager is here like, you doing this again?
Right. But you just smashing everybody.
You just smashing everybody. But me, I mean, sorry. We see Big T in the mirror, in the window. And he look upset. He looks as it's giving scorned lover. And Big T reveals to us, he says, who is Clifford?
Not the whole government.
The whole government. Now, we don't know if, you know, Lil Murda might have said his name in lovemaking.
No. He found the postcards.
And Big T says, you never wrote me all the time that we were in. And now it makes sense to me. Big T and Lil Murda were in a relationship while in jail. And now we see why Lil Murda was not happy to see, like, you know, when we saw him embrace Big T when he got out of jail, they did that 360 circle. And when it got to where we could just see Lil Murda's face, it seemed as if Lil Murda wasn't as excited as he led to be. And maybe again, maybe what happens on the inside stays in the inside, and maybe, you know, Lil Murda actually likes a more feminine being like an Uncle Clifford and doesn't, but who knows whatever the reasons are. But we do know from the way Big T is acting that there was more than passion between Big T and Lil Murda.
Yeah, I mean, Bryce, you might have to face it that Lil Murda is cheating. Your boy Uncle Cliff is the side chick, and you're just gonna have to deal with it.
Well, that is
line. Oh, no, I'm kidding.
Oh, okay. What you know about that Monica? Do we ring your house?
No.
Do we call your phone? Sideline. But listen, here is the thing that for me confirms that Lil Murda is gay.
Oh, you mean
Cliff, not just he might be bisexual. Like for me, it's like, oh, okay, you're a gay man. Like you just haven't come in terms to yourself yet. And again, leads me to more hope that who knows where Uncle Cliff and him could be. But I just thought that this scene was just really great. And again, I am here for the complicated yet real stories of gay black men. And presenting them in this form and in this light, where, you know, it's not, the audience isn't just gay men. The audience is like, you know, a very open and diverse, broad audience. It's a very black show. And normally black shows don't tackle sexuality like this. And especially with a character like Lil Murda. So although I am upset and although I am pissed, I love to see this type of storytelling.
Yeah, and I know, like, you know, you're a little annoyed because Uncle Cliff is your guy. You know, I know you're rooting for sus, but there is a silver lining. You know, we do see at the end, while everybody is completely upset with what's been going on, Uncle Cliff does text Lil Murder. Mm-hmm. And we have been waiting on this. You know, yes. He has not been texting him back, but he's just like, hey, ain't the world crazy right now type stuff. And that's one of those, like, you know, like,
happy,
wow,
Thanksgiving,
like,
right.
Right, you know, just thinking about you type situations, like small talk. And so, you know, it leads us to wonder what is next. Is, we know Lil Murder has expressed his love for Uncle Cliff. We have not seen him say that he loved Teak. But, like, is this going to be cut and dry where he's just like, well, Teak, you're just going to have to deal with me and Uncle Cliff? Or is this going to be a love triangle? Is Teak going to, you know, take kindly to this? Is, you know, what's coming up next? So I think there's a lot of drama to be found here. It's just going to happen throughout the season.
Yeah, and Lil Murder has to walk a delicate line with Big T, because we clearly see when he gets upset, he has zero Fs to give. And, yeah, like, it will be very interesting. Another storyline to touch on is that Autumn is still homeless and living at the Pink.
Listen, this is an anti-Autumn podcast.
Listen, I'm just saying, she is still homeless. She might be 69% owner of the Pink, and yet it is very much so showing, because she is dedicated and living in the Pink. While she's at the Pink, Corbin steps by and essentially doubles the offer, you know, to, do you know the dollar amount that he offered this time?
He offered $1 million.
Okay.
Remember, it was $500K at first, but, like, he's now doubled it, basically. And that's why Autumn is feeling herself, because she knows if he could just throw $1 million at her, then he could give her more money.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, he drops the dime on her that she's like, well, shouldn't you be here with your lawyer, a.k.a. Andre? And he says that Andre has gone back home. And fast forward to Andre returning home. Now, see, this is the thing that I, like, the issue that I have with, I don't want to say men.
You did want to say that. You wanted to say something else. Yeah. I can hear it on the tip of your tongue. There's no problem with these.
Yes. However, listen, Pastor, I remember the words of the good old faithful Pastor Woodbine. And she calmed my spirit. But yes, this is the issue that I have with certain type of men. So Andre has been living a double life, in love and sleeping with Autumn. He has a good wife, you know, home fighting the COVID-19.
Good. Hold on. A good wife.
I mean, listen.
He thinks
he has a good wife. And, you know, he comes home to surprise her. But not really. Like, you know, her father offered him a job. He didn't want to take it. So now he is coming home because he is thinking about running for mayor. And he wants to essentially get the blessing of his wife. But for me, I think it's a little bit more than the blessing of his wife. It's more the checkbook of his wife, because he's going to need the checkbook. And baby, he comes home to find his wife throat deep in another man.
Yeah, she's throwing her neck at some dude named Dante.
And listen, I am here for Pink Valley and the amount of penises that we get. Thank you. Okay? Thank you.
There's a lot of nudity on this show. And you would think it would be the strippers, but
It's not. And listen, equal rights, okay? Listen, y'all can show a woman topless, show a man pantsless.
Show a man topless, we agree. Show a man topless, and it is even, you know? So a woman topless, show a man topless. That's one for one.
Okay. Well, let's go two for two.
Well, the thing is, you got Dante, who apparently is like a coworker who the family really supports. Like, we find out that his wife, like, and Dante, they were supposed to be together. Like, that's what the family wanted, but she chose Andre. But now he done walked in on her throwing that neck. And, you know, he had to beat up Dante a little bit. He beat him up, kicked him out the house. But then they get into an argument. And his wife, this is the problem. See, and now now I'm the one holding my tongue. See, my issue is that you just got caught cheating. And your first response is, well, can you put your mask on? Because it's cold. Ma'am, I will cough all over all this stuff.
Girl, was your mask on with Dante?
Right. Well, she was like, well, we both doctors and we clean. I don't know where you been. Ma'am, I will cough on all this. I'll spit on these doorknobs. Don't you ever say something like that to me and I'd have caught you, like you said, throat deep.
Neck deep in fellatio.
Right. So, I don't like the show for what they tried to do here. Because we've all said at one time or another that we don't like Andre. But in this moment, I feel like they tried to soften us to Andre. Because they show him getting cheated on. So makes him a victim here. But they also show him, like, your mom and them never loved me like they say they did. They never supported our relationship. this woman like is cheating on him, but telling him like, can you put your mask on? Like, it very much paints him in a, like, we should be rooting for him in this moment. And I don't think so. I definitely am like, no, don't try that. Don't try. I see what you're trying to do with this. Like you, they never thought we was going to be good together. They didn't support us.
But for very good reasons though. What's your job? Because she's carrying you. We see her coming home after saving patients' lives and you doing the typical playing video games, not even hearing her come up the steps.
Yeah.
But I digress.
Yeah, so I didn't like that the show tried to pull that one. They tried to slip that in there, these little soft Andre moments. Like, I don't feel bad for this man. I don't. But also, lady, you're not off the hook either because you were throwing that neck. You married, lady.
Okay.
If she knew he was cheating, I'd be like, whatever, do your thing. But she ain't know, so. You know.
But I mean, they both cheat, and so now what? So now it's, but again, like, now you're a hypocrite because you was just allowing Autumn to throw her neck on you. But anyway, uh-huh. I get it. So that's, we done wrapped up little Andre. So back at the Pink, you know, they trying to get the club back open. Big Al calls in the people. They got a P-Valley group text, and I can't even say it right. All of the ladies come. And the lady favorite, Diamond, comes to lend support and help get Pink up to date and to code so that they can open and they don't need to be permanently shut down.
Yeah, I mean, it was good to see Diamond back, but we know Diamond does not want to be at the Pink because his past there, for sure. And, you know, I don't know what Diamond did with his root or, you know, his voodoo that he was doing to, you know, do protection over that moment he had where he killed that guy. But I really think that that Diamond coming back to the Pink forced him to kind of deal with the repercussions of that. Like, I don't know if it has to do with the witchcraft or whatever, but it definitely felt like Diamond was feeling that the spiritual effects of that, those moments of the last season, you know, while he was in the Boom Boom Room. And so I don't expect us to see a lot more of Diamond because he even goes and tells Big L, like, hey, you should probably find a new job.
Right, and the Big L, and what does Big L say? Big Al say he not, like, as long as the Pink's here, he's here, and that Diamond should stay. And they end that conversation with a fist bump as if, like, Diamond kind of sort of commits to being security.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's even the case because I'm like, Diamond, what are you doing? But, I mean, there are other reasons why Diamond would stay. Later on with my girl Big Bone, who they threw that in there for no reason, just to let you know that
for you.
Yeah. I mean, not for me, for Diamond, for real. I was hating, but you know, Big Bone was there. But we do see that Diamond may stick around. I really don't think Diamond should, but he may stick around for a while. I did like that Big L talked about how Uncle Cliff was one of the only people to hire him when he got out of prison, and that's why he feels so like connected to the Pink. He's like, I'm not going nowhere. If it's here, I'm here. And I really like that. So we are yet to see what's really going to happen here with the haunted Pink. But we know that they have to get it back up to code. And there's now a curfew in Chuckalisa as well. So similar to the Dirty Dozens tour, the Pink like has to close at 8. And so they have to get all this work done and back to the crib before 8 o'clock because they can get, what, a $5,000 fine if they get pulled over?
Uncle Cliff is like, everybody could just stay here. And a lot of people don't want to stay. While Mercedes was finishing the Mercedes experiences, she sees a text and heads straight over to the Pink. But before she even heads over to the Pink, people are like, wow, your mom is so inspirational. And during one of the riots, we see Pastor Woodbine on the forefront of the... Child is about to say the insurrection. Now, that's a lie. The movement.
Yeah, the protest.
The protest. And she really is speaking the word and really being a force to be reckoned with. And just seeing that. But anyway, Mercedes gets to the Pink just in time as Andre returns. And Autumn and Andre are outside having a conversation. Andre tells Autumn that he's returned to the Pink because he's thinking about running for the mayor. And Autumn kind of sort of like, and he's like, why that? And Autumn's like, actually, no, like, I'm not saying that. I'm like, it actually makes sense. And she's like, you know, because if the promised land comes in and I'm just waiting for the right bidder to sell. And he's like, so you really are going to sell the pink. And she's like, well, why wouldn't I? I'm a businesswoman. And baby, Uncle Cliff is in the office listening. And that is right when Mercedes arrives. And Mercedes is ready to take her earrings off and go to work on Autumn. But Uncle Cliff says, no, let's listen to the rest of the conversation. And again, the conversation is just more that Autumn is saying that she has no connection to the pink, does not care, and that she's a businesswoman and she is about the money, not about anything else, which is what Sharia and I have been saying, which is why we are not Autumn fans. And this is not an Autumn Stan podcast.
Well, we hate her. This is exactly why. Like, Andre even calls her cold-blooded, you know, because she has no intention of doing, of keeping the pink. Now, the thing is, it makes sense for her to want to sell the pink for $10 million. Who wouldn't want that kind of money? Who wouldn't want to get that kind of money? But Autumn has been lying to these people. She's got them believing that she wants what's best for them and the pink. And she's like, no, it's just a building. We could just get a different spot. What are you talking about? But that's not what y'all been discussing all season. You have been lying to these people's faces. And I'm happy Mercedes and Uncle Cliff like break all of this up, because I really thought this was when Autumn was about to get punched in the face. I really thought Mercedes was going to have to handle her that time. They let her make it, but not before all the dancers and Big L come out and see her for the liar that she is. So we finally get the Autumn exposed party in this episode.
Yeah, and I mean, it doesn't seem like it really changes much, and Uncle Cliff is, like, done with her. Then we see the next morning, they are getting their inspection, and they don't pass. They don't have the filters, and the plastic covers are not right, and the lady hands the thing to Big Al. Big Al hands it to Uncle Cliff. Uncle Cliff say, hand it to her!
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he done with her. But, you know, there's really nothing he could do, because financially, she still owns the pink.
She still owns the pink.
Yeah, so if she wants to sell it, she can. So I think the rest of the season is going to be us trying to figure out how we can either keep Autumn from selling it or how we can get the pink out of her hands. Because,
right.
Yeah, she like they said, she's a businesswoman. But this businesswoman is living inside the pink.
Okay.
Ma'am, you homeless. And that's not to disparage homeless people. That's to disparage you, Autumn. Like, you really don't got a pot to piss in. And you really, like, you really acting like you the boss of this when in reality
you're really not. And you got half of that money with Mercedes. And again, I feel like maybe this is foreshadowing, but I feel like, yeah, the guy died and, you know, Mercedes killed him. However, you know, Diamond still has that ring of the guy that could be easily planted somewhere on Autumn. And I just feel like they might, you know, we see him, the guy that they killed, or her ex-husband, ex-boyfriend, ex-lover, he in the pink. You know, we see the ghost of him. We see the hat and the pin shoot. So, again, I definitely think that death may come about, and I think they might be pinning it on Autumn. And before we leave, there also was another major scene was, what was the name of the old mayor?
That was Mayor Tydell.
Mayor Tydell. And we know that Andre was his godson. Mayor Tydell has other children. And when Andre returns to the home, it seems like there are moving trucks. And there was a reading of the will. And it looked like that Mayor Tydell did not leave his home to his biological children. He left the home to Andre. And now that becomes Andre's mayor electoral campaign headquarters.
Yeah, Tydell Ruffin is a mess. Like, you basically kicked your family out of this home, you know, like, and to put Andre in there. And we know that he really loved Andre, like, as his own child. So I'm not shocked by it. But, man, you know, to just show up and these people be like, thanks for putting us out. Bye. You know, and Andre really didn't seem to have any remorse for it. He's like, oh, okay, well, bye. And he immediately makes the call to Corbin and says, let's set up shop. I'm running for mayor, and this is where we're going to do it from.
The pink is heating up. And listen, I'm here for saving the pink, but y'all know I am just tuning in this season to see what happened with Lil Murda and Uncle Cliff.
I think I'm Team Teak and Lil Murda. I don't know. Bryce. You know, they got a love that lasts.
You
Uncle
just
new chick on the side. We know we really don't know her that much. Like, we might have to be on different sides of the argument. I don't know.
You just really want to awaken Spicy Bryce. That's all is what you want. And I'm going to give you what you want. Okay. I ain't even about to play. But
Bryce,
listen,
please. We only got limited time. What are
listen,
you talking about?
Listen. I appreciate you, Chappelle. And listen, we will be back hopefully as a threesome. Okay. As Chappelle will be the coach. I'm the coach's wife, and Sharia will be Mercedes, and we will be back to finish the Mercedes experience of all three of us recapping episode 5. But before we go, Chappelle, what you got cooking up? Cause you cooking up a lot.
I'm not cooking up that much. You know, still covering nothing but Netflix with Rob Sisson. You know, this week he and I were joined by Jenny Autumn to talk about Snowflake Mountain on Netflix. And so if you watch Snowflake Mountain or if you just want to hear me talk about it, check that out. Subscribe to Nothing But RHAP on Twitter. Subscribe to Nothing But Netflix wherever you get your podcast, or follow me on Twitter at Chappelle's_show where I'll be tweeting out all the links to the podcast I'm doing.
Yes. All right. Well, we appreciate you, Chappelle. And this is this week's cover of Pink Valley Season 2, Episode 4. And we are back this month, June, that it be. It might be coming to a close, but of course, we had to bring you your Purple Pants playlist. A lot of new music has come about. It is definitely feeling like summer, so you know your baby boy cannot do the Purple Pants playlist alone. Let's welcome back to the Purple Pants podcast. You might know him from the Silent Podcast Network. You might know him as 8 Ball Bangers, but I know him as Isaiah Goins. Welcome back to the podcast, Isaiah.
Thank you for welcoming me back. Yeah, it is summertime. A whole lot of music's been dropping. I got a lot of opinions. Oh. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited.
A lot of chitter chatter regarding some of the artists that we picked. So I love talking new music with you, but I also love getting into like the nitty gritty of it. So, I mean, listen, without further ado, here is the playlist that Isaiah and myself have curated for the Purple Pants Posse for June 2022. What you got first on the list? Cause it's give and break my soul. Okay.
Yeah. You got Break My Soul by Beyonce. Literally came out last week. Is what sounds like. Release the time, release the strain, release the stress, release the love, forget the rest. I'm gonna do my hair, cause I'm lost for my life. He's back and I'm sleeping real good at night. The queen's in the front and the dom's in the back. Ain't taking no flicks. Yes. Yeah.
So, nice. Beyonce is back. Act 1, The Renaissance, is dropping July 28th, and she snatched our souls. What was it, last Monday night?
Yeah, yes it was. And the Hive was very loud on Twitter. Yes, they were.
They were. First of all, this is something new of Beyonce. I love the fact that, you know, Beyonce now is to the level of, first of all, she could drop surprise albums. You know, don't even tell us. You know, you just turn on your phone and you see an album. Now, Beyonce has elevated herself to her promotion is now the bio of her Instagram.
Which is crazy. But congratulations to her. This song is a hit, first and foremost. I like that she's kind of like, I don't know if you call it house or something. I mean, I love house music, but I don't know if you call it house or what category you want to put it in. But like, it's kind of reminding me of... kind of like Lemonade, where like she's just trying something different, but like it's more upbeat and it's very fun. I like listening to it.
Yeah, no, I think that the song itself, people do consider it house music. And it's a different vibe of Beyonce. People are like, is this the whole album that we're going to get? I don't think so. Anyone that knows that Beyonce knows that she switches up the genres in her music. But more importantly, it's the lyrics and it's what she is saying. In these songs, you know, she is saying, release your job, you know, release the trade. Now, you know, for me, that was speaking to my soul. And normally Beyonce doesn't directly speak to the LGBTQ plus community like this. Mm-hmm. Normally, like, you know, she just talks about her experience and us as humans can interpret it however we want. But I really feel like the song is saying a lot. You know, she said freedom. She is saying revolution. She is saying love. She's saying strike. She is saying to the gay black man that DL man does not love you. Okay, let me say it again. Because she is listen, Big Freedia said release the trade. Some people are thinking like, oh, are we talking the trade that we do at work? I'm an electrician, so that is my trade. No. In the gay community, the trade mean demands, okay?
Yeah.
And Big Freedia is telling us to release the trade. Woo! Very powerful message. I think that a lot of young queer men like myself get wrapped up in this circle of the trade. And listen, it's time to release them. She's talking therapy. She's talking black-owned businesses. She's talking about being intentional. She's talking about breaking the cycle. She's talking about liberation. So if you have not heard Break My Soul, get into it because the queen is coming.
She is coming. I'm very excited for this album. I think easily could be like album of the year. Like this is a great single to start it out with for your promo. I am very curious what her project's going to sound like, but Beyonce's ready. She's coming for some with some force, so I'm hyped for it.
Yeah, no, and it's with a Beyonce project like we have seen since, I believe it was B-Day, when she came with dropping a video for every song on the album. It's not mm-hmm. just the music for me. It is definitely the whole presentation, the sound, the artwork, the imagery, the themes, the hidden themes within the themes. So I'm just really excited. Now, I'm not a member of the Beehive, okay? I am a Beyonce fan. I am a member of the Destiny's Child Hive, okay? I've always been a Destiny's Child fan, and I always love to support my girls, Kelly, Beyonce, Michelle, even LaToya. When Latavia was on R&B Divas, I tried to support her. But anyway, I like to always support my girls. And so I'm just really excited to see what Beyonce brings. It's been a while, and you know, when Beyonce comes, she comes. I'm hoping that a tour ensues, because a Beyonce tour is amazing. But nevertheless, for me, it's like, yes, let's get this project out so that after this project is done, maybe, just maybe, we can get a Destiny's Child reunion album. It's really what I want. It's
that
really
would be sick.
I would really love to have a Destiny's Child reunion album while I am in my 30s. And I just, I just really want to, I'm here for Destiny's Child. So, but I'm also here for Renaissance. And, you know, Beyonce is very black, very proud. So I am sure that this music or this album or the imagery of this will be definitely something pro-black, definitely something pro-women, in which in a time like right now, her body, her choice, her music, her Beyonce. Mm-hmm. So definitely needed.
How realistic is it that we're going to get Destiny's Child?
Listen, reading? Isaiah, stop playing in my face.
I'm just asking, like, is it possible? Like, I don't want to get hopes up.
I think it is very much so possible. Beyonce is still alive and around. Kelly is still alive and around. Michelle is still alive and around. They are still in the prime. I don't see why not. The only thing that concerns me is that I do know that Matthew Knowles still is the proprietor and owns the name and the rights to the music of Destiny's Child. So, I know that, you know, Beyonce and all of them, they're not really on good working terms with Matthew Knowles. So, it would not surprise me that even if we were to get a new album, I wouldn't even be surprised if they went under the name of, like, DC3 or something, just to get away from Matthew. But I definitely believe that a DC3 project is on the way.
It's like the difference between now and then is that they got a Jay-Z in a very powerful position. So, I mean, they can figure it out.
I don't think we even need a Jay-Z in this equation. This is Destiny's Child.
I'm talking legal. I'm talking legal.
They will work it out. Okay, that's her father. They will work it out some way, somehow. Matthew just wants a cut, and I'm sure Beyonce won't have a problem. But they will work it out some way, somehow.
We're going to figure it out.
We're going to need
it. Okay.
Beyonce, Kelly, Michelle, if you listen.
Get on top of it. Yes. All right. So the second song on this playlist is actually from Drake, who dropped a couple of days after Beyonce, which is...
Before.
Oh, before, sorry. before. He announced it after, you know, she announced it. So it's like, this is Jimmy Cooks off of the album Honestly Nevermind, featuring 21 Savage. Dane in the studio with Dale Lace, rest in peace of Drama King. We was straight stunned. If I spin a block twice like it ain't nowhere to park, spit a bad side of his head like he barked. Yes. You chose and, such a wild place to play that.
Well, listen, it's the Purple Pants playlist, and we are we're here for the music and we're here for the vibes. June is Pride Month, but June is also Black Heritage Music Month. So listen, we're getting into all of the things. And so sometimes I've heard a lot of chitter chatter, and Drake has dropped a new album called Honestly Nevermind, and it is very much a dance hall club music. I was gagging because when the album dropped, there were so many memes on the Twitter and the internet, like, ooh, Drake dropped this album and made this album for the gays, because it's very much house music. A lot of different criticism about this. Some people are like, oh, I hate it. Some people are like, I love it. At the end of the day, it's Drake. Drake is another monster in the game. You know, it doesn't really matter. I know he did something around like 230, 280, and some people were saying that, oh, that's kind of low for a Drake album. Yeah, I mean,
that's yes, still money.
Yes and no. How many albums are you guys selling in a week? Also, we do know that Drake has just re-signed a new deal. And so that includes his masters and what it costs to stream. So, yeah, some people might be saying, oh, $230,000 is not a lot. But, baby, when it's Drake and you just signed this new deal, you might be only selling $230,000 in your first week, but you might be getting a paycheck like you sold $900,000. So, and again, no promo, no nothing. Drake took the Beyonce route and just dropped this album upon us.
Yeah, so this is a surprise drop. This song is like the only like real rap song out of all of them. I mean,
it's sticky. It's a lot. Like, I feel like, sorry.
Oh, no, you're good. Go ahead.
No, I feel like I hate when I hear that criticism from people, not just you, but just I be in the Twitter streets. Oh, it's not really rap. I mean, the beats are different. He's still rapping. I mean, have we not listened to the Drake catalog? Have we not, like, listened to, like, when has Drake ever really stuck to just rap? Drake, a lot of times, he gets criticism for singing. Oh, he's for the late. Like, I mean, I feel like this is different, but it's the same.
Yeah, I mean, we see him, like, Hotline Bling or like, his Views project. Like, he taps into different genres. I feel like this specific song could have stayed off the album, though, because I think the rest of the album isn't such like a dance vibe. And I think it's unfortunate that this one song, even though it's very fire, if you like Jimmy Cook, listen to it. I feel like it's unfortunate because I feel like this is the most streamed song off the album, and it kind of like takes away from what he was really trying to go after, because he hasn't really tapped in a while, at least, into like this whole dance hall scene. And then it's different, but like I don't mind different.
More house, not dance hall.
More house. Oh, yeah, my bad.
No work. Listen, I'm here to help.
I appreciate it. But it's like all right, if you really wanted the main focus to be on like this house type album, leave this song off of it, because this is what everyone was looking for, kind of expecting, and now since this is like the song everybody wanted, everyone's streaming this instead of the rest of the album, and they could just say, oh, that album's bad, blah blah blah. Like, all right, when Kendrick Lamar, and I hate to compare these two, when Kendrick Lamar dropped a completely different album, he stayed with it from top to bottom, and it kind of forced people to listen to it for what it was, right? Where I respect Drake for trying something different, but since he put this song on here, everyone's just streaming this instead of the rest of the album.
I disagree. I feel like people are streaming the album. I feel like this is a jam. It's one of the songs that stuck out for me on the album, one, because I just love 21 Savage. 21 jamming. He just sounds super. I love me some 21 Savage. But also, I feel like when you're talking about Kendrick Lamar, we talk about Drake. Like, they're two different artists. Like, you know, Drake is experimenting and doing something, and Drake has the power to say, you know what, let me just get y'all this house music vibe album that still has Drake on it. And I, okay, like, disagree in the sense, because I feel like a lot of the people that were expecting, like, the rap bars from Drake, they're like, oh, where was this at? Well, he gave you a song. And yeah, so, like, you know, if it didn't have this on it, then people would be like, you know, blah, blah, blah. So for me, with Drake albums, I always personally like to listen to them and find my one little jam that's not necessarily a jam. And then that's the song that I go for. And then it's like, I just add the song to my playlist and, you know, it gets played. So I haven't found that song on this album yet because I've only listened to it like 4 times. But I think overall, I love the fact that he is stepping out into a different lane and giving the people what they want. And again, Drake just signed this new contract. This ain't the only time y'all going to be hearing from him.
Respect, yeah.
And Drake is petty, okay? First of all, you know, it's yes, this alleged beef between Kendrick Lamar and Drake. And yeah, is there a coincidence that Honestly Nevermind dropped on June 17th, the day of Kendrick Lamar's birthday? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. There was somebody from the Kendrick Lamar camp that had posted to their private Instagram that said, like, Drake is petty. He dropped the worst album on Kendrick Lamar's birthday to be petty. So, I mean, I don't know, but I know that Drake is the type of petty that I enjoy. And I do believe that Drake is seeing what all of these people are saying about the album. And I do believe before the summer is over, or not even the summer, this quarter is over, we will be hearing from the You Used to Call Me on My Cell Phone Poppy again. But for me, listen, I don't mind it. Like, I think it's cute. One of my songs on there is Sticky, Call Me by My Name. Like, I like, you know, I clean my house to it, and I'm sure in the institutions of the club industry that love to utilize our culture but not want to utilize our bodies. And when I mean by that, are there a lot of clubs that love to play, you know, R&B and rap music, but they don't want their clubs to look like an R&B and rap music. And so I'm sure there are a lot of clubs that will enjoy this type of Drake. And I'm sure any place that you go this summer or fall, you will be hearing from these songs. So for me, it's a win-win for Drake. And especially, like, I don't feel like he rolled this out like a typical album. So I feel like no matter what it did, it's a success for him. Now, I also read on the internets that Drake got word or wind that Beyonce was dropping that following Monday. So he was like, child, honestly, never mind. And that's where the title came from.
Oh, shout out to those two. It's a coincidence that both Drake and Beyonce put out house like theme music like the same week.
Yeah. Then also your girl Azealia Banks has been brought up into the conversation because Azealia Banks, you know, she is an artist that was on the previous playlist by Isaiah. She is a rapper from the UK, but she has been known for the lane that Beyonce and Drake have entered. It's kind of sort of like what Azealia Banks has been known for, rapping on these type of beats. And I think that, one, I love the fact that people are giving Azealia her flowers because she needs them, because she has a lot going on. And like we've discussed about Azealia before, is that her antics, her mental health, her alcoholism, her just crazy stories tend to overshadow her music 10 times out of 10. So I love in this new insurgence of house-based music, people are bringing up Azealia because I feel like she deserves it. But of course, in true Azealia fashion, she takes to her Instagram stories and she does these like 45 stories of all black, and you're just listening to her. And I, like, one of my friends in my Little Kim text message chain sent me the thing, and I just watched maybe 15 seconds of it. And she was starting off with, Beyonce has trying to been eliminate me from the history books for forever now. And I said, okay, I'm not even about to subscribe to this, Azealia. Bless your heart. They bringing your name back up. Hopefully you can do something with this.
Yeah, she's going full Kanye again, no filter. I saw that on Twitter the other day. She needs to chill out because I was even tweeting. I was like, Azealia really started this. I'm glad that
let's find out. Azealia was the one that started this conversation.
I mean, like, I'm glad people giving her flowers. I just hope she doesn't ruin this opportunity, man. Because
she needs to break. Soul, she need to break the cycle. She need to do something. She need to get them chicken bones out her closet and just like, you know, just get some Febreze and spray that apartment. And get back to the music, because ultimately I do think she is very talented, and you can't take that away from someone. But they often say the most talented people are always the most trouble.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Wow, that was a lot just for those two people.
Sorry,
but that
listen,
just
I told you it's not even about the music at times. It's the story that goes with the story.
That just speaks how big Beyonce and Drake are. There's so much to talk about with those two, so that's awesome.
And your girl Azalea, don't leave her out the conference.
Oh, Azalea too. My bad. But all right. So our third song on this month's playlist is Booty, featuring a lot of Saucy Santana.
Yes.
All right.
Drop it, hey, not behind so fat it still catch the legs. What in the BBL is going on? And not Lotto saying shake what the doctor gave ya. Yeah, so much to say about this song. Again, also, we have a Crazy in Love sample on this. So again, shout out to Queen Beyonce. We do know that Saucy Santana has just signed a record deal with a major record label, and this is one of the first songs that he has released, and it is essentially could be the song of the summer, definitely a TikTok sensation. But bae, what does P. Diddy and them say? More money, more problems.
No problems.
It is, you know, I stand behind the Saucy Santana. We have never seen such a colorful gay man step into the rap industry and command the dominance that Saucy Santana has command. However, you know, when you are a new artist, and especially a gay black man, they gonna try to find any way, shape to pull you down. And so somebody had the time of the day to go back 4 or 5 years to find these tweets that Saucy Santana was making about Blue Ivy. Now, he wasn't making them necessarily about Blue Ivy, but they were talking about Blue Ivy, and Saucy Santana had to say some not so great things about the texture of Blue Ivy's hair. And people were bringing this up because he is sampling Beyonce's song, and at the time he was getting ready to do Houston's Summer Jam. I believe this all came out like on a Monday, and that Friday or Saturday he was headed to Summer Jam in Houston. And, you know, everyone was like, oh, the Beehive is going to get you. Like, oh, my God, you're a grown man making these statements about this and that. How could you? Like, your thoughts, Isaiah?
I didn't even hear about all that. But, I mean, it's just like, I think cancel culture is just so whack. And, I mean, I hate to talk about this, but it's just like, at least, like, when those first started, all right, whatever. But, like, it's 2022. Y'all still going, like, who has the energy to scroll through tweets years like come on, y'all. Like, are y'all serious?
People have the time. And again, like, let's remember that for me, Saucy Santana has been very prevalent in my life for the last 3.5 years. However, he is just breaking into the internet, like, not the internet, but the culture. Like, he has yet to peak yet. And I think this comes with the stardom, is that you have to face some of the things from your past, which is why I don't subscribe to taunting people or saying negative things, especially on Twitter. But, you know, Saucy Santana is from the South. Saucy Santana is very open and honest about his past, used to be selling drugs, used to be doing a lot of things. And so he was not the person that he is today. And so what I say is the comments, yeah, they are a little disrespectful. However, do we allow, are we holding Santana to that standard of himself from 2018? Or are we allowing him to evolve, is the question that I say. And so he has acknowledged the tweets. And basically he was like, y'all trying to cancel me and y'all can't cancel me. And some people didn't like his arrogance to that. Like, you know, and for me, I say stand on it. Like, y'all trying to cancel me and it's not going to work. And I think that a lot, what I think Saucy is demonstrating to a lot of these new artists that care so much about what the internet says, and oh my God, they canceling me today, is that, like, Saucy Santana is a feminine black man that wears nails and makeup, you think the internet is going to stop or bother him? He lives that, you know, a lot of people just face that internet stuff on the internet and on social media. But like when you are a feminine black man who lives in his truth and nails and, you know, you got a body shape, like we hear and see that to our face every day. And so I was just like really proud of him to just like stand on what he said. Now, I wish he issued an apology sooner, but they also were saying, oh, you're going to Houston. You know, that's where Beyonce's from. The Beehive hits different in Houston. And Saucy Santana said, let me just show y'all what I'm about to do. And went to Houston and tore it up. Okay. It wasn't a Beehive sending the bee emojis that day. But who, listen, the drama continues with Saucy Santana. So after that, he went to another gay pride. I forget where. And, you know, during his set, he was basically saying to one, he's at gay pride, and two, he's talking to his black queer men, as I often do. Sometimes, like, you know, they put you in this realm where you're speaking to the LGBTQ, like, no, I can only speak to, like, what I know, and that's me as a gay black man. And I feel like he was speaking to the gay black men saying, whenever people need their makeup done, who do they call? The gays. When they need their hair done, who do they call? The gays. Whenever they need an outfit, who do they call? The gays. And he said that, like, us as gay black men, we are the blueprint. And for me, that I resonated with that. I understood what he was saying. However, there were a lot of females that took offense to what Saucy was saying. Like, how are you the blueprint? We birth children. You're wearing nails and wigs trying to imitate us. And for me, it was like, in all of that, and all of that negativity that a lot of females were sending Saucy Santana's way, I felt like is, well, do you support the LGBTQ plus community, or do you just support us when we are in the back shadows? And like, you know, and again, I understood what the women were saying, but I don't think that they understood what Saucy Santana was saying. And I think what he was trying to articulate, or what I perceive from it, is that, like, we are the blueprint. We are the blueprint into how to walk in our lives as gay black men. And we affect the world. We are in so many avenues and so many facets of anything with the arts, anything with, like, fashion, anything with cooking, anything. We are there. We are the blueprint. And I don't think that that is a negative thing to say. I think when you think about rappers, Isaiah, and you think about female rappers, and you think about, you know, Drake and them, when they are rapping, right, are they saying, like, I'm friends with Isaiah Gomez, but I'm Bryce Isaiah, and I'm the best rapper alive? No, they're saying, I'm the best rapper alive. You know, like, they are talking their talk, and that's what he was doing, was talking his talk. And I think that, for me, the people that were so easily offended by it, I just feel like reminds me of a lot of the people that say that they support the LGBTQ plus, that oh, I love Bryce, he's so amazing. But yet let them then learn that their younger son is gay. Then it's, oh, not in my household. Like, it just was reminding me a lot of that. And I think that, although, yes, Saucy Santana has a very interesting way of presenting and how he talks, but I think, like, y'all trying to pick apart this man. And I think what he was really doing was just trying to praise the gay black man, a gay black man praising the gay black community. And that's just what I think of it.
And I mean, it's not like that hasn't always been like the MO for Saucy, like his whole career. I really just think that it's one of those things that, like, people like to start hating on you when you start getting like commercial success and all that stuff, and they look for things to tear you down, you know? So it's like, I think just keep doing what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think he should really change anything that he's already doing now, and just ignore the haters, because they're going to just come naturally. I've seen it with so many artists over the years. Coi Leray, for example, got a lot of haters once she started blowing up. People try to tear her down. It's just like, just ignore them. Yeah, just keep doing what you're doing.
I agree. I also do think, Santana, you are with a record label now. Let's get a publicist. Let's run a lot of some of these things by publicists. Like, again, new levels, new devils. And I think that, yes, continue to be you, but at times you do have to evolve, and you do have to kind of somewhat hear the criticism of what people are saying and acknowledge it and change it in a way that they can't say anything. However, again, with Saucy Santana, Pride Month is still here, and he got the opportunity to perform with the original Material Girl, which is Madonna. Madonna was doing a set at the Gay Pride, and, you know, Madonna has the original song Material Girl, and Saucy Santana has his own version, and Saucy Santana got to perform with Madonna, and they did another little cute little number, and it was so cute. And again, to what I love about Saucy is that all of these negative things are coming out, but he is not letting that stop him. He is getting to the bag, and he is still out here representing. So listen, I'm still here for the Saucy of the Santana.
And lastly, I totally forgot to bring this up. We kind of called it last podcast.
Oh, yes, Saucy, yes! You know,
XXL, yeah.
Yes.
Awesome.
So made the cover, the only person in white in the cover. And I was with some of my friends last weekend, and they were saying they did not like Saucy in the white. They felt like, why was everybody else in black and Saucy in white? And I was like, well, listen, they trying to tell us that, listen, Saucy is the one to watch out of all of these people. So I didn't mind the Saucy all in white. So listen, I'm here for it. And yes, Saucy has an endorsement deal with Coach. You can see him on your television in a Coach ad. Yes, a Coach ad. So again, I am here. Saucy Santana is doing the thing for the LGBTQ plus community, but more importantly for the black gay men. I'm here for it. I didn't mean to go on a rant, but listen.
Oh, no, you good. Gotta do what you gotta do. Okay. So, actually, funny to say, we got another XXL 2022 member on this list as well. It's Dochi with her song Perspective. And I love Dochi.
So did I. First of all, I didn't really know who, like, again, I feel like the TikTok realm is so prevalent in this world. I, like, knew of the song because watching TikTok, how does it feel to be, you know? And I was like, when you put this on the list, I'm like, who is this? And then I heard the song and I was like, yeah.
Listen, the past 2 days, because I've been going through, like, the artists on the cover just to see who I like. The past 2 days, I've just been listening to nothing but her music. She is so good, it's ridiculous. Like, this song is more like the club scene, but like she really raps. She can sing. If you see her music video, she got it all. She has so much star power. She got this one song with Isaiah Rashad called God, I gotta think of the title, but what she said, something like that. But it's so good. Like she, in my opinion, like has what it takes to be like a superstar. Like she reminds me of Doja. She really reminds me of Nicki a little bit, but she has like her own little flair. She got some Azalea. She got a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And I really like her. And like, I really want to see her do good. Cause like, I've been addicted to her music the past couple of days. It's been wild.
What I loved more about the music is that here we are talking about Beyonce and Drake, like, oh, bringing the resurgence of house music. But listen, this song dropped a couple of months ago, and it's definitely giving me house music vibes in itself. But yeah, no, super talented. When you put it on the list, I didn't know who it was. But, you know, then I had to go. Anybody that has an Apple user, I don't know about y'all Android users, Isaiah. but I love when I like an artist or I like a song, I will then go and say, create a station on this song. And so it will bring you more songs of the artist and other artists that are similar. And that's really what I have been myself. That was like my Saturday night bath music. So, no, I loved it. And then when I did a little bit more research, I was like, oh, yes, come on with the double XL cover. Like, yes, come on, let's bring in this new music, this new wave, this new vibe. Just here for it.
Yeah, she's dope. She's from Florida. I hope she makes it to the distance and just like becomes a superstar because she has so much talent. I listened to like I don't know how many like albums from her or whatever, but like I didn't get tired of listening to her. Like all her vibes are awesome. So like I like her. It's one of my favorite new artists for sure. Dochi, check her out.
Yes, and then our final two songs of the playlist this week were from our homework last week. I believe our first homework assignment was a song that we like jammed to in high school that like we still can't believe that we jammed to. And this week's homework assignment was a song that our parents or an artist that our parents listened to. And I will go first. My mom has always been a Luther Vandross fan, okay? And I remember listening to Luther, just, you know, so many songs that he has, such an amazing voice. And I remember before Luther died, again, here's another Destiny's Child reference. So right after Destiny's Child broke up, or they split after Survivor, and they all went to do their own thing. Michelle Williams, you know, I love me my Michelle Williams. She released her first studio album, Heart to Yours, or was it Heart to Yours? Might not have been Heart to Yours. I think it was, it could have been Heart to Yours. Anyway, so she was doing her little thing, and she went on, she was the opening act for like this older tour, and it had Michelle Williams, it had Angie Stone, it had Gerald Levert, and it had Luther Vandross. And so me and my mom got to see Luther, and so it was just so crazy. But I put this song on here for a couple of different reasons. One, Luther was an amazing artist. However, there were rumors back in the day that Luther was a part of the LGBTQ plus community. Luther never came out per se. There have been people that were very close to him that have spoke about it. But Luther never really confirmed it for himself. Luther was of an era. He was a black male R&B singer of the 80s and the 90s. And to be gay and with his type of music, I don't think it would have worked at that time. But, you know, if you, like myself, go back and watch some Luther Vandross music videos, a lot of performances, I think that you can answer the question as to whether he was in the community or not. And even if he never came out, I definitely think that he is a pioneer for the gay black man. And he has this song. It's called Only for One Night. And, you know, it's a jam. A lot of the older people know it. And the other day, well, I shouldn't even say the other day, maybe like 2 years ago, one of my cousins sent me this song. It was like, have you listened to this song? And y'all know me, I love me a good old slow, something that makes you feel emotion. And when I tell you this song, but listen, it's called If Only for Night. Let me just play a couple snippets of
it. Let me hear it.
No one has to know. If you want to be totally discreet, I'll be at your side.
Got vibes.
If only for one night. Listen, do y'all hear what Luther? First of all,
nice voice.
Okay, Beyonce is telling us to release the trade. The DL men do not love us. And here we are with these lyrics in If Only for One Night. And people are saying Luther never came out. But I feel like if you listen to some of these words, he is saying, I won't tell a soul. We can be discreet. If you want to just come lay with, listen. If Only for One Night. I feel, my mom used to play this song, but again, when I listen to it in the context of it being a gay black man and I hear these lyrics, I know what Uncle Luther was telling us, and I know that feeling. And so If Only for One Night is definitely a jam, and Luther Vandross is an amazing artist, a pioneer. Whether or not you know, he was in the community, I think that there is a lot that the black gay community, the black gay man, can get from Luther. And so I just had to put Uncle Luther on my list.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my mom used to play this around me too when I was little. You know, she's a huge R&B fan, or slow jams, whatever you want to call this. But nah, good vibes. He has a beautiful voice too. I really like listening to it. And it was good to listen to the song again once you put it on the list. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yes. And your homework assignment, who was the artist and the song that you decided to go with, Isaiah?
So I could have cheated and picked a song for my dad, because he's listened to a lot of Biggie. And if y'all know me, I love Biggie. But I was like, we've talked about him before. So I chose my mom. And she always listens to this song by Jill Scott, and it was called A Long Walk. It's a good vibe. Here's what it sounds like real quick. Billy in the building.
Come on, summer, let's take a long walk around the park. After dark, come on, Jilly. Jilly from the song. Block. Yes, I love that song. Makes me feel old because I remember when that song came out, I was in high school when Jill was a new artist, and she's from Philadelphia. So, you know, who knew that Jill would go on to be, first of all, she's an amazing artist. And again, Jill, when she came out, she was in her late 30s. And, you know, for her to go on to be the superstar that she is, she also, like, has shared the story many times of, like, how she was a writer and how that this Erykah Badu song that she wrote for, and Erykah Badu was supposed to perform one day, but she was not there, and so Jill was there, so they got Jill on stage, and Jill performed the song, and then that's kind of sort of how Jill got her start as being from transforming from a writer to an artist. But we live for the Jill that is the sky, and A Long Walk is definitely.
And you know me, anytime there's like a Philly artist, I embrace it with open arms. And, I love the fact that she's a Philly artist. I actually had no idea until you said that. So, I mean, that's a fun fact. You know, I just love it. It's soft in the ears. I put it on my, I forget which playlist I put on. I don't know if it's like my slow jam or something like that, but don't do that.
It's giving very much like a Bay playlist or a nasty nighttime playlist, Isaiah.
Don't do that. But it's okay. it's a good song. So yeah, that's why I put it on there. That's my mom. She used to play it anytime I was in the car with her. I had to listen to Passenger. I was like, "Can I get aux?" So she was like, "Nope, I'm driving. I'm listening to my music." So there you go.
Yes, and so that is this month's June Purple Pants playlist. So, Isaiah, I feel like I came up with the last two homework assignments. Do you have a homework assignment for the next playlist for us?
I'm sure I could think of something. Let's do, it's summertime, okay. Right? Let's do our favorite summer theme song.
Okay, we can do that. So our next jam will be, or our next homework assignment is a summer vibe, summer jam songs. And of course, Purple Pants Posse, if you have a song you want to submit, you can slide in the DMs, or you can tweet us or send us a message or DM us on the Purple Pants Podcast on Gmail, and we will actively look to start incorporating the Posse's playlist in the Purple Pants playlist. Isaiah, it is always a pleasure. I have so much fun. I feel like it's school because I be schooling you. You ain't know Jill was from Philadelphia. But no,
I'll be putting you on too.
You know, you do. So I can't even hate. But before we go, Isaiah, let the people know where they can follow you at, what you got cooking over there on the Silent Podcast Network.
Yes. So you can find me like usual at 8 to Ball Bangers. You can find me podcasting on Silent Podcast. Recently, we've been talking about movies, animated content. We have a Marvel podcast we just started, and then Big Brother's coming up too. So even outside of me, there's a whole lot of new people we just brought in, so you can go tap in into those guys. A whole lot of good content coming out. And also, you can find me on RHAP and here every month to talk about music with Bryce. So it's a fun time. Make sure you tap in.
All right. And this has been your June Purple Pants playlist.
Who's the freak? Who's the freak? Who's the freak of the week? Who's that? Who's that? Who's that freaky, freaky, freak? Who's the freak of the week? Might be me, might be you, might be.
And we are on to this week's Freak of the Week. And keeping in the theme
of just women empowerment. I saw this article that came across my desk and that I felt like, listen, we need to continue to champion our women. History was made this week when the Phoenix Suns hired Morgan Cato as their assistant general manager and vice president of the basketball operations. With this move, Morgan becomes the first Black woman to hold an assistant general manager position for the NBA franchise. And listen, it's 2022 and that's far too long. However, I just want to champion and celebrate my good sister, Morgan Cato, as being the assistant general manager and vice president of basketball operations for the Phoenix Sun. Listen, we see you, Morgan, opening these doors for other Black and brown girls to be able to hold positions such as the assistant general manager. And listen, I am hoping and praying that in the very near future, it's not assistant, it is the general manager. And with that being said, I just want to celebrate Morgan as she is this week's Freak of the Week. Well deserved. Continue to wear your crown very high. If Morgan Cato is this week's Freak of the Week, that means we are coming to an end of a very emotional and very strong episode of the Purple Pants podcast. I want to thank all of the women that had submitted their voices to this week's church announcements. Listening to all of those messages truly brought your baby boy to tears. Honestly, I just listened to the messages as they came in and I just was just an overwhelming sadness. However, it don't stop here. Okay. The buck does not stop here. We've got work to do in this country and I am committed to doing whatever it is that I need to do to make this right, to make this country the land of the free, like we is supposed to be, allegedly. But I just, my heart goes out to every woman, every person affected by this decision. And again, this is not the end. And this is a start. And listen, we need to organize. We need to come together. We need to stop putting our differences to separate us. And we really need to focus on what brings us together. So again, thank you so much to every person that contributed to this week's episode. Thank you, my Purple Pants posse, for always listening, supporting, and, you know, caring about the things that I put out on this podcast. It truly, words can't say thank you enough. If you have not already, please ensure that you are subscribed to the Purple Pants podcast. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever podcasts are available. You can find the Purple Pants podcast. Please hit subscribe, write a review, give your baby boy some 5 stars. And don't forget to tell a friend, to tell a friend, to tell a friend, to make sure your elected officials know her body, her choice, because it's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants podcast. You better get your headphones and listen up quick. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants podcast. You better listen in public. Might make your stomach hurt. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants podcast. You're trying to unwind. You better get that box wine. It's the Purple Pants podcast. You're trying to get your snack. You better hurry right back though. It's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants.